Okay, welcome back to Joel Radio, everybody. Joel Fragamenti here. There's Corey Hall over there.
Hey now.
Working hard. Furiously putting together his list of best movies of 2011.
I'm really looking at the worst ones, too.
Oh, are you? Oh, yeah, you work on those, too. Because we're going to run down everything, our faves, for last year, 2011. I just got to see a bunch of these recently. Because of the DVD and other... You know, some of these movies barely came out. So.
Some of these movies, you got to blink.
Yeah.
No, they're gone. Gone with the wind.
So we will talk about everything we saw. And my list probably not definitive in the sense that there's a lot of stuff I still haven't seen. That is like your Golden Globe winners, your
sure
probable Oscar contenders. So.
Gotcha.
But
gotcha. So I mean, hey,
yours is going to be a little more because that's what you do. Is they
well,
send you out
I'm,
to watch all
I'm
these.
Really working on trying to make this an accessible list here
sure.
because I saw stuff that literally
right.
four Americans saw.
Well, I also saw a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. I wonder how many. I was
just personally, for my list, I am making this an American film.
An
list.
American.
American. I'm
American.
Making this American.
Are you?
As the dearly
Jeez,
departed,
do I have a French
as the dearly departed Rick Perry would say,
I have two foreign films in my top 15.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
Not one, but two foreign.
I
movies.
Mean, I could do that. There's
well,
foreign films that come out all the
well,
time.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, a lot of these, like some of the stuff that's on my list, was released only, you know, like maybe on DVD in America, or it played, you know, maybe it didn't play mm-hmm. in Detroit, so you wouldn't have seen it theatrically,
right?
So I probably have things that you haven't seen on my list as well.
Well, fine.
Well, I mean, just saying.
Yeah.
Because as much as you are the king of the press screening, I'm also getting weird stuff on Netflix and stuff throughout the year that maybe you haven't seen. So anyway.
Well, there you go.
But we'll get in. That's, so it'll be nice. They'll be overlapping somewhat. But then, because, you know, we did our best of TV last time, and you'd think that our shows would have been the same, and like one show was the same.
That's right.
So who knows what this list holds. Could be anything.
It could be all sorts of stuff.
And if you're bored with us talking about good movies, we're also going to do the worst movies of the year. That more up Corey's alley because they sent him to every piece of garbage.
Well, look, look
for the paper.
I got to watch a lot of movies mm-hmm. a year, and I'm going to take it. I'm going to take my blood back. I'm going to
yeah.
take a little bit of my.
This is your time.
I'm going to have a little piece of
absolutely.
I think if you listen to Assholes of the Year, you can already predict
there's
a couple of the films that will be on
those.
The list. But,
and then, you know, I've got my honorable mentions and other sort of lists.
Sure.
Maybe that aren't the top 15 best of the year. So anyway, let's
yeah.
get into it. We'll give these, we'll count down from 15 all the way up to 1. And if Corey or I hit another person's top movie, then we'll give out that number as well. So we'll get through it. You want to start this show? What do you want to do?
All right, I'm going to go number
Corey.
15.
Number
actually, 15. This is not an American film, but it is in English.
It's in English.
Attack the Block.
Attack the Block.
Number 15.
Attack the Block, which is actually my number 8 movie.
Oh,
so
oh,
there you
wow,
go.
There you go.
Well, go ahead, Corey. You picked it, Attack the Block.
Yeah, it's Attack the Block. We're from... It's got Nick Frost.
Yeah, he didn't do much in it, but he's
right. But it's I think Edgar Wright produced or was one of the producers,
executive produced or something. Yeah.
So it is from that family tree, although it's not Edgar Wright.
It's
a new director.
The guy Joe Cornish, who's a comedian.
Yeah.
He wrote Tintin as well. That came out.
Oh,
this year.
Okay.
So he's kind of an up and comer in that British. It was his debut feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So debut feature. For it's kind of, it's almost in the vein of Shaun of the Dead. It's not as it's not as spoofy,
right?
But it's about you know a big one of the a council apartment block basically.
Yeah, basically public housing would be the American equivalent to
mm-hmm. in a janky ass part of London mm-hmm. That is terrorized by these little 15-year-old punks mm-hmm. Who rob everybody and take their purses and run around and talk in this horrible. Stupid, like half British, half Jamaican, like slang. It's awful.
It is. That's one of the tough things about it. Is it's sometimes hard to understand the dialogue. So
it sounds a little bit like Sacha Baron Cohen. It sounds like Ali G.
It is a little Ali G. Yeah.
But it's dreadful to listen to. It really hurts your head.
Mm-hmm.
You make Cockney would be a relief, right?
All right.
You want to hear that, but it's anyway. It's like
we got to get him off the button and then better to what?
Yeah, it's unlistenable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You wish Michael Caine would show up.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Michael Caine.
Yeah.
And you would like that, but
we got to get him off the block. Yeah, and we got to put more.
It's a mess, but the movie's fun, and these crazy furry aliens that look kind of like
those were great.
The aliens look almost like. I don't know, like Marc Jacobs drew them or something. They look like a street art almost.
They're crazy.
They're big furry wolf-like things, but they have like fluorescent mouths, like a Banksy drawing or something.
They're amazing looking. Yeah. Really cool. And
the monsters show up. And in great 80s kind of horror movie tradition, they show up, they tear some shit up, and we never really get much of a reason why or how or any specific.
Right.
There's one kid who watches Discovery Channel or Animal Planet, and thinks he's figured out how the aliens reproduce. But it's a fun movie, entertaining, a little thrill ride.
I would say, if you wanted to give us an equivalent of, like, two American movies, it's like Goonies meets Predator or something. Mm-hmm. That would be an equivalent to it. But it's also got that sort of hip feel of something like Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
Or Hot Fuzz. It's also great in that it takes these kids who are pretty much unlikable. I'm spoiling the movie in just a very minor way. These unlikable kids, and then by the end you're rooting for them to kill these monsters. And that's one of the great, I think, achievements of this movie is they took these guys who you kind of go, fuck these kids, I hope the aliens eat them.
Well,
and then by the end you're rooting for them to kill the aliens.
The kid who's the gang leader is kind of a villain until the aliens show up, and then he has to be a leader.
Right, so it's a great movie. It's a lot of fun. Again, you may not understand everything they're saying, but if you like something different, something very kinetically, very well shot, stylistic. The aliens were great. You know, if you get the Blu-ray and probably the DVD too, there's some really cool making ofs on that. You can see how they created the monsters, which were actually, most of them were actually real guys in suits.
Aha.
Which is pretty cool. And then, you know, they digitally would, you know, create more of them and stuff. And it's a good, real good movie. A fun movie that maybe you never heard of. I know that this movie, in the world of like the press and stuff, was talked about forever. It was screened for the press forever, and I don't remember it ever even theatrically being released.
Did it come out in Detroit? No, it did. It played in Detroit for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, so it.
And that's the problem, though. If you're in a market like Detroit, and we're on the back end of top tier markets. We're like a 10th or 11th.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles, then you probably have a better opportunity to see movies.
But anyone can see it now because it's out on DVD, it's out on Blu-ray, and check out Attack the Block. That's a good choice. I like it. It was
what
my
is this
number
now?
Eight.
A DVD. Now, what is that A Blu-ray?
A Blu-ray.
What is a who? What's a who dat?
All right, now my number 15 is we're going to stick with sci-fi, and I already know that you didn't like this, but I liked it, and I've seen this on other top 10 lists even. But
yeah.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes is my number 15.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, I liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I wasn't the only one. A lot of people liked it. Corey poo-poos it, although Corey dislikes it largely because I think it's not canon with the 60s Planet of the Apes. I think that's part of your beef with it.
It's not so much canon, it's not in the spirit. I will say this. I didn't make my worst list.
Okay.
So I didn't hate it that much,
right.
But I thought it was way overhyped.
Well, I thought they took it and they made something that was truly scary rather than trying to be campy.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you know, because when you know the Planet of the Apes story, the original, you go, well, when the apes took over, they were like these smart people. And this is like before they were completely evolved into their humanoid forms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just running around, you know, beating the shit out of people. I mean, that's the end of the movie. But it's interesting. The effects, I thought they did about the best CG characters that's maybe ever been done. I thought a lot of people are talking about Andy Serkis for like a best actor nomination for doing the facial capture. I think that's bullshit, but it was still really good.
Well,
and believable. And
Andy Serkis, nobody talks about how good King Kong looked. I mean,
this is better than King Kong.
But I mean, the character.
Character. The character of King Kong was good, but this I like because they're real animals. They're not a giant animal, and there's more that your eye would perceive to be fake. And I'm not saying these are 100% real, but it's real good.
I would actually say that Caesar, the lead character, is the least real looking because. He's got a little more human element in his face.
You're right. They gave him more
human.
The
gorilla and the orangutan.
The orangutan's awesome.
Look great.
Yeah, the orangutan's awesome.
And I will say that the end of it, the last battle, is terrific.
Yeah.
But that means you got to slog through Frida Pinto and James Franco was so bad in this movie.
He
was trying to intentionally kind of sabotage it. Or, you know what I mean? Like, he was just taking
What did he do when he hosted the Oscars? Didn't want to look like he didn't want to be there.
And Franco can be... He was awesome in 127 Hours.
Yeah, he was.
Right?
Yeah.
Just great in that movie. Mm-hmm. Terrific. He can be a really good actor when he's trying. And then he's in the Spider-Man movies. He's kind of half-asses it, you know? And in this one, I got a feeling like he was real stiff.
He didn't have a lot to do, and maybe that's why he looked like he didn't want to be there, but... The movie's just—it's just a lot of fun, in my opinion. I think if you like sci-fi, if you like action, this has all of that in it. The CG's cool. It's it's got a little bit of Jurassic Park thrown in there.
It's got John Lithgow as the magical Alzheimer's retard. Like, you know, like that character, his Alzheimer's kind of comes and goes a little bit. And he's a little spacey.
See, I don't even remember him in it. I just remember that.
You know, everybody remembers the monkeys, and they forget how bad the rest of it was.
The movie overall is a lot of fun. It's not, it's not the best movie of the year, but it made my top 15.
All right, okay.
I thought it was worth. It's definitely worth seeing. Good sci-fi, good effects.
I can't say I hated it enough to slam it. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I have a lot of sci-fi on my list here, so we'll get some other ones. But that was my number 15. All right, give me a 14, Corey.
Number 14 was a little film called Limitless with Bradley Cooper.
Limitless.
Came out early last year.
Also, sci-fi, kind of.
Yeah,
on the
it's
edge
on.
The,
it's on. A, it's got a sci-fi premise. Right. Sure. Mm-hmm. It's basically Flowers for Algernon meets like Wall Street.
Yeah.
It's It's basically what instead of becoming just a great guy, what if he has a drug which just accelerates his mental function tenfold, and he can do it all. He becomes a stock wizard, and he becomes basically an asshole. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a real fun movie, real well done, well sharply directed.
I have it on my honorable mentions.
Sure.
So I liked it a lot. Yeah, I saw it and liked it a lot. It's Faustian. It's sort of be careful what you wish for.
It could have been dreadful.
Yeah,
was a really entertaining and pretty satisfying movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they did a lot of cool stuff in there too visually where when he's on the drug, everything has a different color palette.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty neat. It's a really good...
It's a real smart thriller, which you don't... It's a real high-concept thriller. It's real smart. And that's how you do it right, as opposed to some of the other stuff that came out this year.
Yeah,
including one with Justin Timberlake.
Oh, God. I didn't see
In Time.
That. Yeah, I'm sci-fi heavy, and that didn't even make my list, although it's very Twilight Zone-y.
It's got a little bit of a Twilight Zone vibe, but you know what? Rent it, check it out. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, Limitless is real good.
And it's fun, and you don't feel bad
Yeah.
A lot of times, there'll be a fun movie. I can even admit I enjoyed Fast Five for what it was.
Okay, yeah.
As something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a fun, entertaining popcorn movie that you don't feel like your brain has been
It doesn't
melted.
Insult your intelligence.
Yeah, it's solid.
It's good. Yeah, Bradley Cooper, good job in that. That was nice. I like Limitless a lot. All right, my number 14 is a documentary film, which I probably talked about a lot on this show throughout the year. Just because I thought it was so cool. Maybe I haven't. I don't know. But I'm sure I told Corey I liked it. But it's called Foo Fighters Back and Forth.
All right.
Which probably you didn't see because I'm guessing I saw this on the Palladia channel on cable. It aired theatrically. I know it aired one night in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Like you went and you bought a ticket like it was a Foo Fighters concert. And they played it all over the country on like a Tuesday night at some point.
Right.
In the year. And then otherwise, I think you would get this on home video and Palladia showed it. But I think even the Palladia version might be a little bit shorter than the one you buy. But anyway, what's great about this, I love a good rock documentary, and there's been many of them, and I've got a bunch more even on my list that aren't in my top 15. But what's great about this is, you know, the Foo Fighters, that, you know, you get to see Dave Grohl, you know, coming out of Nirvana. You know, the first half hour is all about Nirvana and how that went away. And, you know, he was, you know, secretly recording these songs, like when they were doing Nirvana sessions.
Right.
Before Kurt showed up, Dave would be playing these Foo Fighters songs and getting them on tape, you know, making demos.
Kind of like, wasn't George writing songs that he didn't
give to
the
George
Beatles?
Did that too, yeah, and then that all came out on All Things Must Pass. But yeah, so Dave was doing all that, and then he starts the Foo Fighters. But what's great is that, you know, he's fired a lot of guys from Foo Fighters. Like, he had this drummer that came in, and he was the guy from Sunny Day Real Estate, and Dave has to fire him when they're recording their second album. Because Dave's a great drummer, so Dave goes, I'm just going to play the drums. They tried it with this guy. So what he does is he fires the guy. Mm-hmm. But what's great is that every guy that gets thrown out of Foo Fighters is also in the documentary.
Right.
Talking about how he got thrown out of Foo Fighters. So it's not just a movie where, you know, you only hear one side of the story. You hear both sides, and Dave really looks conflicted, having to admit basically that he's a dick. At least he was a dick in these cases. And it made for a really interesting approach.
I'll be honest with you. Other than, what is the guy, Cooper? What's the blonde guy that's like...
Who's that?
In the Foo Fighters, who's like in all the interviews with Dave Grohl. They're like best buddies.
Oh, the drummer. You think about the drummer.
Oh, yeah, what's his name?
Oh, God, what is his name? It's on the tip of my tongue.
Okay, I couldn't identify another Foo Fighter other than Dave
Grohl. The bass player has been in it from the beginning, Nate. He was in Sunny Day Real Estate. But yeah, they got the drummer who was Alanis Morissette's drummer, who's now in the band. But he ODs at one point. Right. That's in the movie. It's great. It's really... I mean, it's a rock doc, and, you know, Foo Fighters music, even if you don't like it, I think the story's interesting about a rock band who got real big, had their issues, you know. But it's really well done, and I think the inclusion of all the former members takes it to the next level. Not to mention, if you're interested in Nirvana, seeing the way Nirvana ended and what he went through with that is great, too. So.
Well, all right, I'll check it out, even though that is a band I have steadfastly... not cared about.
But you know what? When you just they show you their videos and stuff, it's all stuff that you probably liked, at least on some level, whether you went out and bought it.
Yeah, I've never.
It's another story.
I've never actively not liked Foo Fighters. Right. I've just never cared.
Yeah. Well, this movie's interesting. So go see.
Which you think I would, because I loved Nirvana when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know? But what are you going
to
do?
Back and forth by Foo Fighters. Good movie. All right. You need to give me a number 13 movie.
My number 13.
Lucky 13.
Cedar Rapids.
Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, with Ed Helms.
Yeah, I saw it.
John C. Reilly.
It is also in my honorable mention.
Shot here in Detroit.
Ann
Arbor.
Yeah.
In environs nearby.
That's the hotel is in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Where this whole movie takes place for the most part, yeah.
Anne Heche.
Mm-hmm.
Just a funny, nothing spectacular. Look.
Right.
It's funny. And sometimes I'll reward a movie just being a comedy that works.
Well, if it's a comedy and it's funny, it works. It's like
so many times though, you get these lists of people and they make their best lists and they're like, is it really aspiring to be true art? Yeah. And I'm like, no, you got to base it on what genre standards it has. Cedar Rapids is a workable, fun. I laughed the whole time.
Yeah.
And enjoyed it. And
I did too.
It was a memorable comedy for me.
Yeah, John C. Reilly's great in that. It's a real good movie. It's yeah, I mean, there's not even a lot to say about it. Just go see it. It's light. It's a comedy. It's not stupid. Mm-hmm. There's goofy stuff in it, but it doesn't insult your intelligence.
And I would say in a year in which now every comedy has got to be the most outrageous, outlandish thing.
Right.
You've never seen a comedy like this. And Bridesmaids, which was not on my list.
Yeah, not on my list either.
What might have been in my runner-up list.
It's in my honorable mention.
I had an alternate list.
Yeah.
But everybody talked about how great Bridesmaids was.
Right.
But I laughed more at Cedar Rapids.
I enjoyed Cedar Rapids more. Bridesmaids was too long, I thought. And not to mention at the Golden Globes, every joke was about how Melissa McCarthy shat in a sink.
Right.
You know, and I go, well, if that's what people really took away from Bridesmaids.
Did you see the fat girl take a dump in the sink?
Right. So,
yeah, doggies.
It's,
boy, oh, boy.
Cedar.
Mr. Plummer's going to have his hands full with that big old dump.
Cedar Rapids is like the Hangover light, almost. Like the first Hangover. Like it's kind of like a guy who's a fish out of water and he goes crazy and shit happens to him. But it's not. It's almost like.
I think it's. It's a damn fun. I'm thinking
it's
about
funny,
it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about John C. Reilly in the movie now, and I'm laughing.
Yeah, John C. Reilly's. It's real good. It's It's almost got a little bit of Alexander Payne. Kind of feels like that a little bit.
But they never take the drama so far that it smothers the comedy,
right,
which I enjoyed.
But there is sort of a deeper story than just John C. Reilly making an ass out of himself. But that's in there, too. But, yeah, I like Cedar Rapids.
Uh-huh.
All right. Number 13 for Joel is something I also talked about on the show, and I know it only just probably 3 or 4 shows ago, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. And I don't think you saw it since then, but The Last Circus, the Spanish killer clown movie, that's just, it's wild.
All right.
In fact, if you go to joelradio.net, the trailer is right on that main page there. So I embedded it when we talked about it a few weeks ago because that was wild. I saw it, I think this came out in 2010 in Spain, but was like on the festival circuit that year, and then it sort of came out, I don't know if it was over the summer, really limited release. But if you want to watch something weird and something crazy and something really cool looking, and now it's super violent at times, and you know, it's not for everyone, but you know, I told my girlfriend, I go, there's this killer clown movie, so it'd be scary. And it wasn't so much scary as it was like gory and phantasmagorical. Is that the word? But it's very much, if you like...
Wow, that might be the biggest word Joel's ever used on the show.
Triple word score for Joel. But
ding, 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 ding.
But if you like Guillermo del Toro kind of stuff, you'd probably really like this. It's way over the top. It's crazy looking. Watch the trailer. If you dig the trailer, 2.5 hours of that, you'll dig it, man. The Last Circus.
All right. Hardcore. All right. Good talk. All right.
That was my number 13.
You betcha, though.
All right. So, Corey, we're on to 12. You didn't see Last Circus, I'm guessing, because probably never played here.
Yeah, didn't see Last Circus. No, you got me on that one.
It's good. Check it out.
Well, you are the expert on all things violent clowns. That is your it's your wheelhouse.
Had a little appeal, but it's not like it's good. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Number 12 is Hugo.
Hugo.
It's a Martin Scorsese joint. You might have heard of it. You
might have heard of it.
Yeah.
It came out.
Yeah.
Was in your theaters.
I would have put Hugo higher on the list, and it almost fell off the bottom of the list.
Yeah?
Because it's a little wanky. It's a little bit self-congratulatory, jerk-off festival. The thing about Hugo, I didn't know anything about it going into the movie other than I had seen a brief TV spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to go in knowing as little as I can about movies sometimes.
Yeah.
I know that's my job is supposed to be to know what everything is from the beginning of time. And I've done it that way, and I find that then bores me when I see the movie.
Right.
So I try now to kind of not know. Hugo did not go in the direction I thought it was going to. I didn't know anything about the kids' book. So it took me on a little bit of a surprise.
Was it a graphic novel, though?
Yeah, something.
I think, yeah. But
kids' books often have pictures.
The invention of Hugo Cabret.
Yeah, well, who read that shit?
Yeah, no, not me, but maybe you, because you're like the comic books.
I do like comic books, but not that much. Anyway. And and if you looked at the trailer, you thought it was maybe going to be kind of magical and Harry Potter-like.
Yeah.
And, it's not.
Yeah.
There's no magical element at all in Hugo. Sort of.
But they explain it where it's not magic.
Mm-hmm.
But it is magical at the same time.
It's magical, but there's no dragons, there's no goblins or anything. I can't, I don't want to give it away, but what it ends up being about is something very specific to what Martin Scorsese, what gets his jollies off.
Right.
And that's not black women. that's De Niro.
It's Bobby De Niro.
Yeah, De Niro likes that. But you know what I mean? And it looks great. It looks tremendous in 3D.
I have Hugo as number 2, so that's how much I liked it.
You liked
Hugo. Now, granted, I'm a real movie nerd. And if you're a movie nerd, it will help you like this.
I am too, and I was turned off by how much
it was. But I'm talking like old, like history.
Right.
Like, the movie goes, it's George Millet is, if I'm ruining
you're blowing,
it.
You're spoiling it.
But it's okay. But if you've ever seen that stuff in film school, it's all about that. And if you've seen that, I think it will actually help you appreciate it. Because my girlfriend saw it with me, and she didn't know who that guy was and thought it was phony. Then I realizing that it was
a real guy,
even though it's a phony story around him.
Everybody on Earth has seen the one shot. Three frames of a George Millet's movie you've seen, which is a rocket hitting the moon in the eye.
Trip to the Moon, I think is what
which
it's
is
called.
Like a guy in a moon mask.
Well, the Smashing Pumpkins made a video that was a tribute to Millet and stuff. So, But I loved it. The 3D is, this is top three 3D movie of all time.
It's a really excellent use of 3D.
And here's what Scorsese did to me that made it above all that, is he put stuff in the foreground, which a lot of movies don't realize. If you put stuff in the foreground, it gives depth to, like, there was a lot of just tracking shots and there'd be a railing. And, you know, they're sort of in these the rafters of a train station a lot. And there's lots of, like, metal flying by. Well, and it just gave it dimensionality that these other movies just don't have. Because every time they put the lead actor is the closest thing between you. Because they don't want anything between you and the actors.
Right.
But then again, you don't get that 3D effect. Like, if you watch Tron, whatever that Tron Legacy was, it's perfectly flat. There's nothing there. There's, like, no environment for there. And Hugo, there's metal, and there's gears, and there's trains, and there's all this shit. And it looks beautiful in 3D.
Metal gears are really cool in 3D.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And the kid's job is to wind all the clocks in the Paris train station.
I really liked Hugo a lot. Again, I think it's... I think some people are going to be bored with it. It's too long. My girlfriend also thought it was going to be magical Harry Potter fairy dust, and it wasn't, so she was a little disappointed in that. But the film nerd in me loved its appreciation for old movies, and the acting's good. You know, what can I say? It's one of those movies, too, and we'll talk maybe about this rather than where they have real, not just Malay, but there's other real people.
There's real people in the movie.
In the movie that they never really refer to, but if you know history and culture, you might spot Django Reinhardt in there because he's in there. You know, I mean, stuff like that. And then there's other movies that have done that, which maybe we'll get to. I don't know. But anyway.
All right.
Hugo's good. I like that. Corey's number 12. My number 12 is another documentary. Again, this one was on HBO, so I don't even know if this aired. I don't think this played theatrically, but it still counts because it was made for HBO, or they bought it anyway. It was made. It's called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane. This is the story of the lady you might remember who drove the wrong way on the New York State Thruway and killed a whole family. She killed her, like, nephews and nieces and kids, and then she killed this other family of, like, a dad and a grandfather and their kids. And they were driving home from, like, their cabin. And they took two cars, and the husband went, and then the wife left with the kids. The husband made it home, and the wife never made it. And they tried to figure out what happened to her, and, you know, because she's dead, they don't really know. But they found, like, a half a gallon of vodka in the car. And so they're accusing her of being drunk, and that's why she went the wrong way. But the husband denies it, and it's this big mystery. And they recreate this whole thing. And it's really well done. You got to see this, because you can't fathom what happened, and you'll never, and ultimately at the end of the movie you kind of don't even figure out what happened.
Oh well, good.
But it's a journey. I know, I've ruined it for everybody, but it's really sad, and it's bleak, and it's not a lot of fun. But if you like it's a good movie. I'm saying the story, it's bleak. You know what happens with these families is horrible.
Yeah.
It's a huge tragedy, but the access that they got to the families and the way that the families, you know, it's heartbreaking and fascinating at the same time.
All right.
And if you like a real story.
Okay.
You know, if Ed Helms at an insurance convention is too made up for you, you go ahead and watch a lady get drunk and wipe out two families on the freeway and watch everybody cry, and that'll snap you right back to reality.
Well, there you go.
And I don't know if that's on HBO ran it over the summer as part of their documentary series that they did. Mm-hmm. They did a Bobby Fischer documentary. That was very good also in that series this summer. But, yeah, there's something wrong with Aunt Diane. I don't know if that's available. Are you looking it up? Are you?
Yeah.
Is it on DVD or anything or Blu-ray? I don't know if they've released it or not, but
it's
cool.
I don't even know.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it wasn't a theatrical thing. It was on HBO, but.
All right.
That story was interesting to me, and so was the movie. So, again, it might be a case where the subject was so interesting, it just made the movie good. You know,
okay.
Sometimes documentaries work that way, and then sometimes, you know, documentaries follow around a homeless guy, and it's great too. So, you know, a lot of them do that.
You know, there were a lot of good documentaries.
Yeah, and I've got an extra list that didn't even make my top 15.
Boy, Joel went deep on this thing.
Deep.
Well, thank you, Van O'Wright.
Deep.
What are we on now? 11,
you're doing
12,
11. You're giving me an 11.
I go number 11.
Number 11.
It's a good question.
Everything you've picked, I like, too. This is nice.
Yeah, you probably didn't like this one. Jane Eyre.
Didn't see it, so yeah. Go ahead. Give us
I'm shocked this didn't get higher. Maybe yeah. actually probably was higher on my list originally, and then I reshuffled for the show.
Yeah,
but boy, it's really good, and I could give a crap usually about what? Period piece mm-hmm. sort of dressed, you know, but Jane Eyre is really what Michael Fassbender is. Okay. It's almost like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. They played it. It's almost like a horror movie.
I read the book in school, so I'm mm-hmm. familiar with that. And I think I saw some movie adaptation of it. Yeah. They've made this probably the 12th movie that they've made of Jane Eyre.
Right.
Going there's back a, to the beginning
a,
of time.
There's a cool one with Orson Welles okay. in the 40s.
Yeah.
Which he stars in but didn't direct. But the take on this one is a really almost haunted, and it's just really beautiful looking. This guy, Cary Fukunaga, who did Sinombre, directed this. And it's got a really cool look and a really cool style, which it often is hard to do with those period pieces. Jane Eyre, go get it. Check it out. Mia Wasikowska.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, love Mia Wasikowska. Well, she was in... She was Alice.
Alice in Wonderland, yeah. Oh, okay. See, this movie, okay, that's fine.
What are you looking up
there? I'm looking up there's something wrong with Aunt Diane, and then it's not even, it's just part of the 2009 Taconic State Parkway crash Wikipedia entry.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't even have its own, so I don't know if that's out on DVD. Jane Eyre is out on DVD. I've seen it in the store.
Sure.
I recommended it to my girlfriend, mm-hmm. and I go, you'd probably like this. And she's like, ah, because I got her that Mildred Pierce from HBO. She watched that. Mm-hmm. And she really liked that, which was, you know, Todd Haynes made that. It was a TV thing.
I know some.
And I go, you probably like Jane Eyre, too. And
I know some of you would probably rather pour hot sauce in your dick hole than watch a chick flick like yeah. this. But Jane Eyre is really good. It's well done. And it's a story. It has been done over and over and over again. They nailed it. Good job on Jane Eyre. All right.
Yeah, I haven't seen, like I said, I read the book, didn't see the movie. It's been years since I read the book, too. It's probably been goddamn 25 years since I read that book. But
yeah.
Good book, and something I'd probably end up checking out at some point. Okay, my number 11, speaking of documentaries, I got another documentary. This one is also on cable. I know the DVD of this is coming out soon, though. It's called The Love We Make, which was the story of Paul McCartney organizing the concert for New York post 9/11. So the movie takes place like in the weeks following 9/11, and it was shot by the Maisleys brothers, or at least one of the Maisleys. I think the other Maisles. Maisles is dead, the other guy. But the guy that they made, if you've ever seen the Beatles, the first U.S. visit with all that mm-hmm. grainy Beatles footage of them in the hotel and this
and they
the
did
radio.
Grey Gardens and
right yeah yeah
their famous documentary
but you know if you've seen that Paul got them together to shoot this and they shot it. You know, it's funny because people I've read complaints, people were a guy reviewed the Blu-ray and he goes, this is a grainy shitty looking movie to come out in 2011, but the thing is it was shot in 2001 and they sat on it for 10 years I guess just to commemorate the anniversary of 9/11. Paul finally said, hey, put this thing together and put it out. So when you see it, it's shot in like 4:3 pillar. You know, if you watch it on a modern HD TV, it's pillar boxed and it's real grainy black and white 16mm footage. But the way that the look in it, Paul McCartney's life, it's like it's never been done. There's just him and the camera guy walking down the street. No security, no nothing. And people are like losing their mind that it's Paul and you see him signing autographs. And then you see him, like, hop in the car and go, you know, and he's actually, you know, giving the driver directions on how to get away from the mob. And you can tell Paul's done it. He's like, all right, I want you to pick me up over there, but you're going to let me out, and I'm going to walk the last two blocks up there. You know, and he's, I'm going to let me out at the park, and I'll, you know. And it's really inside stuff. And then there's a lot of, you know, you see the concert for New York as that's going on in Madison Square Garden with The Who. And there's tons of celebrities that show up. Howard Stern shows up. President Clinton shows up. Steve Buscemi's in that dressing room hanging out. And you get all of this backstage footage, like super-duper candid stuff. Like James Taylor comes back and talks about like how Apple signed him and going back to when Paul played bass on Carolina on My Mind. And it's just nice. It's just this really fly-on-the-wall footage of all those guys. And it's really fascinating. And, one thing, too, that I noticed watching this is that you really realize what the world was like in the weeks and months after 9/11, and we've come a long way from then.
Have we?
Yeah, it was weird, and people were different. Things were different.
I remember sitting on the couch with this girl that my roommate had brought home who wouldn't leave, and just remembering being very unpleasant as we sat on the couch watching news coverage, and I'm like, well, who is this girl? Why would she leave? But he had, you know, a one-night stand turned into like three weeks of living in our house.
Did anyone document that? Was that shot anywhere?
I took a lot of footage of her.
It'll be out on Showtime.
Wandering around the house going, well, I'm like, why are you here? Whole world is on fire.
Yeah, but if you're a Beatles guy, you gotta watch this. This is the best. Because they also came out with that George Harrison documentary that Scorsese made.
Yeah.
It was no good. I mean, it wasn't terrible. You can watch it. It was watchable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want some insight into the Beatles, and then there's nothing wrong with the George documentary per se, yeah, but this is an original look. It's really cool, and I love
well,
it.
Well, so, before we move off the Beatles topic, did not make my list, but a honorable mention to Last Play at Shea.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Which is, it's largely about Billy Joel, who played the last concert at Shea Stadium. But it also ties into the whole Beatles show.
Yeah, I've seen Paul and Billy together playing
right
at Shea, but I haven't seen the whole documentary.
Well, in the documentary they show what it took to get Paul McCartney to get to Shea Stadium.
Right.
Because he had something else going on.
He was playing in Montreal that night.
And he had to fly in, and there's a great segment with Paul where all the cops kind of go, it's Paul McCartney, come on.
Right.
You know, so that's cool. And there is a lot of talk about, you know, the guy who drove them when they were there in 64 is the same guy who drives Paul this time.
Oh, okay. And,
you know,
it's probably the same guy that's in this movie, too.
So, there's a little bit of fun backstage-y Beatles stuff in that as well, if you want to check that out.
Cool.
But didn't quite make my top 10 list.
Yeah,
but
I haven't seen that. But you were going to number 10 for Corey. We're actually into the top 10. We've cracked
the
top 10.
Holy mackerel. Number 10 for me.
This is where it gets tough.
It's a film I thought was going to get more attention to come award season, but fell off the cliff. 50-50.
50-50.
Another comedy.
Yes.
A comedy with a little more heft to it, a little more gravity.
Okay.
But Seth Rogen in a part where I didn't hate him. So, so for that alone,
Seth Rogen being less annoying than normal, hence,
well, Seth Rogen going back to being a sidekick, which I think is what Seth Rogen's best at.
Mm-hmm.
They put Seth Rogen as the lead, and movies tend to get a little mushy.
What is he the sidekick in, though? I mean, I guess in this, and
like 40-year-old virgin, you know, little sprinkling of Seth Rogen.
Yeah, yeah. But that was the movie that made him the lead, though, was 40-year-old virgin.
But on TV, you know, on Undeclared, Freaks and Geeks, he was kind of the, he's the wise Alec that pops off and makes a crack.
The comic relief.
Yeah, and he's back to doing that here, and he's good at it. So, it's good cast all the way through. Mm. You know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
Angelica Houston, can't go wrong there.
Okay.
Bryce Dallas Howard is a real evil bitch in this movie. She's even more evil in The Help, but she's good in this, and it's a funny, moving, smart, touching. I'm getting gay just talking about 50-50, but it's a good movie.
I haven't seen it, so it's not out on DVD yet. I think it comes out in a week or two.
Well, then fine.
So that's when everyone can see it, or February, something like that. Very soon. That's why I haven't seen it. I had missed it in theaters, and now now I can't see it. But I want to see it. It looks good.
Son of a bitch.
I'll see it when I can. So 50-50. Go see it. Yeah, I don't know why that I know what you meant about. Don't you think like the script would get a nomination or something? Maybe
I thought somebody would Oscar get maybe time. A supporting actor nod or something. We'll see.
We'll see.
But it seemed to have fallen off the cliff awards wise.
Well, here's a movie that did nothing awards wise, and I guess this movie was released. Okay, this movie was made and was supposed to be released in 2010, but there was some issue with the rights with Miramax or something. So my number 10 came out this year and kind of disappeared in 2 seconds, but it's out on DVD now. It's called The Debt.
Yeah.
And it's real good. It's with Helen Mirren. And although I'll tell you one thing about this movie. Who else is in this? I mean, it's a long fucking...
Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain is young Helen Mirren.
Right.
Well, here's the one thing. It's basically, if you saw the movie Munich, it's kind of similar to that.
Right.
Where they're hunting Jews after World War II.
They're hunting Jews?
Hunting a Jew. No, I'm sorry. They're hunting a Jew
killer. Right.
No, they're not hunting Jews.
It's a great movie. It's Joel's favorite movie in which they hunt those dirty, money-grubbing, filthy Jews
do you think
all across the earth.
Do you think I just didn't understand the debt? Like, I thought it was about hunting
Jews. Joel thought it was about hunting Jews.
No, it's great.
What happens is these really cool German guys, they go and they go, hey, there's a bagel shop. Let's fuck that up.
All right, I screwed up my review. So I'm not Siskel or Ebert. Who gives a shit? Listen, have another cookie, you fat bastard. Let me finish my review of The Dead. There's a fatal flaw in this movie, though.
Is that they don't hunt
enough
Jews.
There's a fatal flaw in this. They go on with this.
They don't kill enough Jews.
No, listen. Here's the fatal flaw, because I read this review, too. The movie takes place. There's a set of actors that we've talked about. Jessica Stein is young, and then Helen Mirren is old, and it flashes forward and backwards.
Yeah.
They made a fatal thing that screwed me up while
casting
I was watching
error.
It. The guy, the young guy, okay, that is played by, what's his name? Sam Worthington.
Yes,
who's
sir.
The guy from Avatar and a bunch of other stuff, okay? Sam Worthington, the guy they cast to play old Sam Worthington, the guy they got to play, okay, there's two guys and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that's old Sam Worthington doesn't look like Sam Worthington.
Right.
And the other old guy is Tom Wilkinson, who does look like an old Tom Wilkinson. And at some point you realize that the actors who you think are the old, but I don't think it was even deliberate. I think they just screwed up the casting.
Yeah.
Because one of them, they have a romantic relationship. Yeah, and I read reviews.
I thought that immediately when I watched the film. It's Tom Wilkinson and Ciaran Hinds, who was also in Munich.
Okay, yeah.
And the young Sam Worthington looks like
Tom Wilkinson,
the character that Ciaran Hinds plays,
yeah,
or they're flipped. The other guy,
it's completely confusing when you watch it, and then at some point you realize it, and then you go, wait a minute, I almost need to see it again because I didn't understand. And it's like it's not something where the movie's just trying to be clever. Mm-hmm. I think it's just that they screwed up.
They really did.
Yeah,
they should have just flipped the roles.
Right,
Ciaran Hinds and Tom Wilkinson.
It'd be perfect. Yeah, and it doesn't ultimately hurt your enjoyment of the movie, but it's like, boy. God, I can see, and I think because sometimes I watch movies and I go, am I just the biggest dummy in the world that I can't follow this?
No.
And then I go, hey, maybe I'm not the only one. So when I Googled this movie and read some reviews, everyone was like, yeah, the actor should have been flipped. The old guy should have played.
That happens kind of often, and I'll notice it in movies where I'll just go, this casting is off.
But sometimes it should be flipped just because one actor's better than another, or one actor be more interesting is like the good guy or the bad guy. Here it's just a physical thing.
Right.
Where you can't tie the young actor to the old because they look...
That throws me out of movies all the time, in which I will look at a movie and I'll go, there's no way that these people are related.
Right. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah.
And some movies are real good at their casting of families, and some are terrible.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to just suspend belief or something.
Well, if they're good enough, you kind of do. Watch Modern Family.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way anyone's related to anyone on that. And yet it works because they're funny. So, you know.
I could kind of see how...
The mom and the daughters, maybe, but, you know.
Yeah, Shelley Long is the mom, actually.
Shelley Long?
Mm-hmm.
In Modern Family?
Yeah, she's the actual mom.
What are you talking about?
On Modern Family.
Shelley Long?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm not even... She's not even on the show.
She's done a couple episodes.
Oh, okay. So you say that you see Shelley Long and Julie Bowen.
They could, that makes sense. Okay. But yeah, Ed O'Neill, not as much. I hear what you're saying.
Right, yeah, Ed O'Neill and the gay son, it's like they're not related, but you don't care because they're funny.
The best casting they did in that show was that they had Fred Willard play Phil's dad.
That was good, yeah. That was a good cast.
Yeah, no, the Shelley Long was in like two episodes as their mom.
Right, yeah.
All right, anyway, we're off on another tangent. Wait a second.
The debt will drive
me
crazy.
How did we get on a tangent? I thought The Debt was good, not quite good enough to make my list. I had some issues with the end of it a little bit and some of the pacing, but...
It's real good. A lot of people didn't see it.
It's pretty engaging. It is, yeah, it's about Israeli agents who have to go undercover to track down a Nazi.
Right. No Jew hunting. I apologize.
And, well, the Jews...
For those who want to see
the Jews are hunting.
Yeah, they're the hunters. Yeah.
All right.
That was my number 10. So give me a number.
My number 9 is a movie called Submarine, which about no one saw.
Well, I did.
All right.
And it's not on my list, so.
Okay, good times.
Go ahead, though. Tell everybody about Submarine.
Submarine is from a new British director. I've got British films on them. I got foreign films, but they're in English.
I had a Spanish movie on my list.
Richard Ayodele. I haven't heard anybody actually say his name.
The director?
Ayode.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's A-Y-O-D-E.
It's his debut feature.
Debut feature. If you could make a slam on it, you could say it's a little too Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what people will say. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. I just really enjoyed the hell out of it.
But you like Wes Anderson, so you enjoyed it. Right. So there you go.
Although I got to say, I saw the trailer for the new Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, enough.
I've seen enough of that.
Right?
No. You know what? I haven't seen all this Wes Anderson stuff, but Submarine is kind of similar to Rushmore a little bit, but it's also like a coming-of-age kid in high school. And, you know, it's like a movie you've seen a million times, but at the same time, it's... You know, it still works. Like, that plot works for movies. You know, a kid doesn't like his parents. He meets a girl at school that he thinks is, you know. It's the guy who meets the crazy, what do they call that? The crazy girlfriend.
The magical pixie wonder girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, and granted, it's like that. She's not really a magical pixie. She's kind of a bitter little bitch.
Yeah, but he still captures her heart in that same way.
It's just a fun movie. I just enjoyed it. I felt it was visually... clever. I thought it was well directed. There's maybe a little bit too much. There's a guy with a big mullet in the movie, and I thought the mullet was too long. But other than that, you know, and it's set in the 80s, but pretty damned entertaining film for me.
Not making my list. It was okay. I saw it, and it was like, eh, it was all right. Like, it just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit of a snoozer. I think it wasn't, you know. There's just a lot of shots of him walking on the beach in a trench coat by himself or with a girl, and it's kind of like, eh. You know, it's a nice movie. It's a nice little movie.
I let it fall over me and charm me. It charmed me, damn it.
Well, you were charmed.
All right.
That's good. Submarine's good. People like that. I mean, it didn't, you know, set the world on fire.
No, it did not light the world on fire.
Little movie.
All right.
It's a little movie. My number 9 is a movie that was a big movie. Mm-hmm. Called X-Men First Class.
Okay.
Which was, I thought, the cream of the comic book movies this year.
Yeah.
Some people may argue with that, but I really liked X-Men First Class. And I wrote down that I thought it reminded me a little bit of the Star Trek reboot from a couple of years ago that they did.
Okay.
Where they got, you know, good actors, not trying maybe to completely... Well, Star Trek, I think, tried to... make the guys exactly like the older counterparts more than X-Men, where they tweaked them a little bit, I thought, from the older, you know, the X-Men that you know from those movies.
The big problem with the X-Men movies is Patrick Stewart was absolutely perfect to play Professor X.
Yeah.
You couldn't actually get a better actor to play, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He looks like the goddamn comic book. It's the perfect part.
Right.
It's the perfect casting. So, how are you going to do that?
Well, but James McAvoy, I thought, did a nice job.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job.
Michael Fassbender did a nice job. All these guys were good in it.
Michael Fassbender's a pimp, man.
Yeah, this is a lot.
Did you see Shame?
I don't. I have it, but it's not. The shame is it's sitting over there unwatched.
Well,
but X-Men First Class, I thought, was a really,
really... You better watch it. My woman wants it.
Oh, does she? Well, she might be getting it before I get a chance to watch. But anyway, it's real good. Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to see us... is that my biggest summer? No, I do have another summer movie that is a little higher on my list than that. Yeah. But I thought this was a lot of fun. It kind of I saw it at the drive-in of all fucking places, and it took me by surprise how much I loved it because I saw X-Men 1, thought it was just okay. I don't think I even bothered with the other X-Men movies. Didn't bother with the Wolverine movie, but this one was a lot of fun, so I liked it.
Well, there you go.
I wish I could say more, but if you know what you're getting into. But the young cast did a nice job. And apparently, is there one guy, let me just ask you this, because I don't know the comic and the canon of X-Men.
Sure.
Is there one guy that's not really an X-Men that they put in the movie and then he just kind of dies right away?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, because I was going to say, there's kind of one guy who's like, what does he become in the X-Men? And then he just drops dead.
There's a guy who they retroactively like wrote in as a guy, like, we never really saw him back in the old days, but here he was. And he was around for a few issues, and he's in the movie.
Yeah.
And, and then...
Yeah.
And a couple of the villains, people were like, they kind of fused out of something. But
Kevin Bacon's real good in this, too.
Right.
He's a good villain.
They changed that guy's powers.
Okay. Well, I have no problem with anybody changing anything in a comic book.
Right, everything. Right. No, in the comics, though, you hit that guy, and he just gets strong.
Oh, okay. Well,
they changed his powers a little bit. But, I liked it. I thought it was a little too busy. I liked the first half more than
the
second.
Ending wasn't as great, but it does. They do tie in nicely to the
X-Men
movies.
I thought the final battle was well staged, but I think they just crammed it with a few too many characters. And they ranked they ratcheted their power levels up so high. If Magneto was that strong when he was young, he seems stronger when he was young than old. Anyway, whatever.
I have no beef with any book canon on that, but X-Men was good. Number nine.
I just, from a movie perspective, thought it was overcrowded with characters. But I liked it a lot.
Sure.
I left all the superhero stuff off. Captain America nearly edged on my list.
Okay.
Those would both be in my...
Captain America's in my honorable mentions.
Those would both be in my runners-up sections. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good... Captain America, just a fun popcorn movie.
Yeah.
And probably this summer... delivered the most on what you expected it to be.
Yeah, Captain America was real.
You know, and thought nothing, Captain America was going to be science or art, but it was an entertaining popcorn. Right.
Okay. Give me an eight, Corey. A number eight. Give me an eight.
A bouncy eight. Hey. This is a movie that absolutely no one saw, and we couldn't go in a further direction away from X-Men First Class.
How many Nazis are in this movie?
Not a Nazi to be found.
Not a Nazi.
It's a film called Meek's Cutoff.
All right, Meek's Cutoff.
Which I'm going to guess probably did $30 in the box office.
Meek's Cutoff.
It starred Michelle Williams.
Okay.
And Paul Dano.
No.
And a couple other people you don't, Bruce Greenwood.
Wow, yeah, that's some...
And it is, it's a movie, it's about a wagon train. That goes. Okay. It's a wagon train.
Yeah.
There's like four wagons.
Okay.
And they head off, and they're trying to get to Oregon, and they just get horribly, miserably lost in the desert.
Okay.
And they start to kind of turn at each other.
All right.
And it's awesome.
Okay.
It's a bleak ass 70s style. Nothing happens for long stretches. They really push you to the breaking point where you go. What's going to go on? At one point, they catch an Indian, and the people start to divide over how to treat him and whether he's right and if he's going to lead him to the promised land. It's super allegorical. It's super wanky and quasi-spiritual, and it takes you into questions that you can't answer. And I thought it was great. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it transcended into... an upper echelon of filmmaking. No one else saw it and liked it.
Well, but I'm looking it up now as you're talking about it. It came out in 2010 on like the festival circuit and then was released in spring of 2011. But it is available on Netflix and on instant streaming, so people can watch that.
All right, it can be seen.
We could turn on the TV and watch this right now.
You would hate me so much.
I don't know. It has a 3.5 out of 5 rating from Netflix users, but. Yeah, it looks. I would watch that.
You know, one of those movies.
I added it to my Netflix queue.
All right,
since
cool.
You've been talking about
it's
it.
It's a movie. It's a movie that's for. It's for cinemaphiles. It's for people who love movies.
Yeah,
I can't even begin to explain what it reminds me of. Kind of. I can't even equate it. To
let me see what this guy has to say. 1 out of 5 stars. PU, don't bother wasting almost 2 hours of your life on this junk. Any positive reviewers have had their bombastic head up their wazoo. Better take a nap or your dog for a walk. That's just one guy on Netflix.
For sure.
That doesn't mean anything.
But look, I'm recommending this if you are a big film buff.
Sure, I am. I'm watching this.
I would not tell, Heather to watch this movie.
Sure.
I would not tell people that are casual film buffs to watch this movie. This is for, it's a very bleak, stark, and like I said, it's very 70s vibe to it. It's got this sort of Terrence Malick vibe.
Yeah,
kind
sure,
of,
Terrence Malick,
in a way.
Sure.
But anyway.
Well, do you, like I said, it's on Netflix, it's available instant streaming.
My fellow critics were strongly divided on this one. We all walked out of this is one of the movies we walked out arguing about. Sometimes we'll have real vicious arguments.
So yeah, now, do you want to give my eight was Attack the Block.
Okay.
So if you want to give your eight or I can give my seven, how would you like to do it?
Well, that
was your eight. So you're going to give your seven or I'm going to give my seven. Okay. How do you want to do it?
You go ahead.
All right, my seven, speaking of Terrence Malick, is The Tree of Life.
There you go.
Which, you told me all kinds of weird shit about it. And here's the thing about Tree of Life. You're going to hear weird shit about there's all kinds of shots of nebulas and asteroids and volcanoes.
Yeah.
And it is, but the what really makes this movie good is the Brad Pitt and his kids,
mm-hmm.
and that intense drama with really not even a real true narrative to follow. It's almost just footage of this dad raising his children.
Right.
And it's really, really well shot, and it's really well acted, and it's super, and like the detail, it takes place, I think, in the late 50s, or maybe the early 60s, but the period detail is really spot on, and it's super intense. And, you know, Terrence Malick, if you know, his movies are visually amazing, and this Tree of Life does all of that. I could have lived without, you know, you could have given me 5 minutes of Nebulas, and then you put the dinosaur on the beach,
mm-hmm.
and then you start the thing. Sean Penn did nothing. They have the Sean Penn as the one, the kids that's grown up now, and he sort of meets. And then there's a, it's the wraparound. Somebody described this as a remake of 2001: A Space Odyssey, which sort
in
of
a way
structurally
it is
because you have the apes at the beginning of 2001, and
right.
but this movie might have been better to drop all of that and right. just concentrate on
and then the
relationship
apes, and
of
then,
the father and the kids.
And then the apes attack Grapevine, Texas in the 50s.
And, yeah, it was...
Here's what I thought about Tree of Life. It's two-thirds of the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
It really is that there are parts of it, and you're right, it almost has no narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It flows kind of just a weird, very intimate...
Yeah.
Jessica Chastain is the mom, and mm-hmm. she almost doesn't even have dialogue. She kind of sort of... speaks to the kids in real quiet
yeah.
mom kind of communication.
But there's tons of footage of her just walking around and
yeah.
close-ups of her facial features.
And she's
and
so
stuff.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, that's good.
She's drop-dead gorgeous, and Brad Pitt is great.
Mm-hmm.
It to me, that framing device with Sean Penn and the ending
yeah.
was so appallingly pretentious and horrifying. And I love Terrence Malick.
Yeah.
Okay, Terrence Malick makes movies, again, like Meek's Cut Off, that are for no one.
Right.
Badlands is one of, if I had to have a top 10 list right. of movies that are my favorite movies of all time,
yeah.
it's on there.
Yeah.
Badlands with Sissy Spacek and Martin mm-hmm. Sheen from 1973. Amazing.
Right.
Great film. Tree of Life, almost
yeah.
a great masterpiece. For me, the shit with the nebula and the dinosaurs
yeah.
just dragged
it just,
down
it was weird.
Just enough.
But, you know, they got Douglas Trumbull to do these effects, who did some of the
2001
the slit screen thing of going into the...
Right.
Going into the whatever, the black, the monolith and all that
right,
shit
right, right.
in 2001. And I love 2001. I, and a lot of people don't like that, but I think 2001's brilliant. And I thought this was great, too. But, it's not for everybody. But what's great in this movie... is probably the best stuff I saw all year.
Right.
And what's bad in it is, like, mind-blowingly bizarre and yet
yeah.
sort of interesting in its own way. I mean, it's funny because when you hear about this stuff, you're like, oh, I don't even want to watch it. But then when it's over, the stuff that wasn't sort of central to it almost was meaningless anyway. Like, it didn't really have
which
a great...
Why,
yeah,
which is okay. why I left it off my list, because... that stuff detracted okay. from, like I said, two-thirds of one of the best films ever made. It's amazing. You'll be sitting there just captivated. And it's really just about brothers.
Right.
These kids growing up in Texas
yeah.
and doing dumb kid stuff.
And the dad's and a hard creek. Ass, yeah.
And the dad is, yeah, and the dad's really trying to mold them mm-hmm. into something. And he's kind of a hard ass, but you can tell he loves them.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom kind of lets him get away with shit.
Yeah.
And it's a great... That stuff's amazing. It's as well made as any of
yeah,
ever seen.
It's great, yeah.
The shots are gorgeous.
If you like Days of Heaven, which is another Terrence Malick movie, mm-hmm. which God knows who's seen that, but Days of Heaven, if you get a chance to see that, that's awesome. And mm-hmm. this reminded me a lot of that, period-wise.
But yeah, the dinosaurs threw me right off the cliff.
Yeah, the dinosaur is in there, and it the dinosaur looks great. All the nebulas and the volcanoes, like, you never saw a better volcano.
Right.
But it's just like, yeah,
and the ending looks kind of like a Guess ad from the 80s or something. It looks like a weird, like a,
I don't know what,
you know what I mean, obsession
it's,
for
it's,
men.
It's
really bizarre.
I don't even know how to describe the end, but it doesn't matter. That's my point. It was all of the wraparound stuff. I mean, and maybe that's why. That's why it's not my number one.
And Terrence Malick
is that it's my number seven.
Terrence Malick, by the way, has made 5 movies in 35 years.
Well, okay,
he made The New World. which was cool.
Well,
in its own way.
Well, you got to go back to the first movie was Badlands. Yeah.
Right, Badlands, and then Days of Heaven.
Days of Heaven.
And Thin Red Line.
Thin Red Line.
He did nothing for like 20
years.
Yeah,
the Thin Red Line and Badlands, there was like 20 years between those.
Right, and did nothing.
And then you have New World, and now you got Tree of Life.
Right.
And his new movie's in the can. Ben Affleck's in it, but he shot it already, so.
Well, good. One of the great directors of all time, but Tree of Life, maybe just, and I'm sure, you know what, in 10 years, people will still talk about that movie in a way that other stuff on this list won't be on.
Yeah.
But it will, if you, by the way, guys, if you're listening to this show, and I presume guys listen to this show,
guys.
Other than women, if anyone's listening.
I thought we was all ladies listening to this one. Yeah, it's all
ladies. Don't put your wives and girlfriends through this. Because
yeah, it's not a date movie.
For the, unless they're very pretentious and arty, for the sake of your penis, don't make her try and watch The Tree of Life.
Yeah, get Limitless. There's some hunky guys in that.
Yeah, sure,
get,
sure.
I'm just looking at your list. What should you recommend instead of that?
I'm Jane Eyre.
My movie's nothing. There's nothing fun on my list for dates, but yeah.
All right.
So that's my number seven. You got to give me a seven.
My number seven, I don't think you like this movie, but I did. Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
Oh, my God. All right, go ahead.
I think Conan O'Brien,
give it a fair review.
Conan O'Brien Can't Stop is a documentary about Conan O'Brien's tour that he put together while he was waiting to get a new job.
Yeah.
After he got fired from NBC, or quit, or left, or whatever the case may be. Now, for about the first 5 minutes of the movie, you think, "Oh my God, this is a whiny story about what a big baby Conan O'Brien is because he made millions of dollars and he couldn't keep to the Tonight Show." But then it moves on to the road. And it moves on to him putting together this show, which basically was kind of just him playing rockabilly guitar with comedy skits in between.
Right.
I don't know if the stage show would have been all that great.
Yeah. I don't feel bad about missing the stage show, but
I don't need to see Conan playing rockabilly.
Mm-hmm.
But what I loved about the movie and what I thought was great is that it really does give you a television star. He's always aware the camera's on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Conan ever turns off. And that's why they call it Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. It really is. Some comedians are on all the time. And he's on all the time. And obviously the camera was on.
Sure.
But he does drop his guard occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And he does things you won't see him do on TV.
Comes off as a real asshole in at least one scene.
Right.
That backstage in L.A. scene. That backstage at the Universal Amphitheater.
What, with the assistant?
The Gibson Amphitheater. When you know, everyone's coming to meet him.
Right,
and he's just like, I don't want to meet any more people.
Hate all of you. Yeah, I
want to. And it's like Megan Mullally is coming back, and
well,
all
somebody,
these people.
Doesn't somebody bring their like cousin's family?
It's his backup dancer.
Right,
brought a bunch of people.
That's funny though, because then he's turned into his handlers. And he's like, do I have to shake the hand? Of the cousins.
Yeah,
the backup.
How many family? How many family members do you have?
But that's, you know what? Guess what? Every celebrity out there does that.
I'm sure they do.
And
I'm
Conan
sure they
let
do.
Him be seen doing that.
Well, listen, this movie,
and he's also really funny when he's just ripping, when he and Andy are like riding the bus, and I thought it does give you kind of, now on the low level of show business that Joel and I have occupied, but we have been backstage with big name comedians, right? And
right.
You get to see what kind of goes on.
Sure.
And it's usually, sometimes a guy will just sit there and look at the wall, or some guys, if you hang out with them, it's a nonstop show.
Sure, yeah.
And this is what it is. It's a nonstop show. I thought it was relentlessly funny. And a pretty interesting documentary about show business, the process of it, behind the scenes.
Okay.
It probably would have been more interesting if they showed how he built the set for the new show. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I was really, really disappointed in this movie. In fact, I looked it up on Netflix just to see what other people had given it. I gave it 2 out of 5 stars. It has an average of 3.7, so I'm in the minority about disliking it. But there are some real negative reviews on here. But anyway, this guy, it's just... If you love Conan, if you love that show, there's none of that in this. What you love about Conan on that show isn't in this movie, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
That where he's being sort of snarky and witty and sort of, but that at the same time likable and sort of, it's not, he's not charming. He's just, he's a guy who's clearly upset because he got fired from The Tonight Show, and that's understandable, and that's fine. And I'm sure it's true to what really happened. I'm not saying it isn't. But what really happens to Conan in this movie isn't that great. It's just him on a bus, and going backstage to backstage. And then, you know, they show clips of the show, and the clips of the show is he's playing Chuck Berry songs. And it's like, well, what is going on?
You know, but that's okay, because sometimes it's some documentary, a lot of great documentaries don't really involve anything other than, you know, just sitting back and watching what happened.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to have a narrative necessarily. He goes on a road trip and he goes to do. He goes and hangs out with Jack White, but
right. You know what? Here's the thing.
One thing that frustrated me: I thought the Conan in this movie is meaner.
Oh yeah,
and funnier in a sharp way.
He's funnier. He's meaner.
No, but I mean, you know what I mean, in a different way than he is on TV.
But he also
does a thing on the show that makes me nuts, where he sets people up for jokes, mm-hmm. or he sets them up to sell some dirty anecdote, mm-hmm. and then he goes, moo, my! He does that kind of Johnny Carson thing, and I kind of hate that shtick.
Right.
And it's the whole shtick where, you know, oh, I can't believe you just said, can you say that on television? And then this, Conan's just kind of really what he is.
I like that he is what he is, but at the same time, it's just, I didn't enjoy this at all. My girlfriend... Uh-huh. Sat with me. I know we talked about him because I had him on my Assholes of the Year because I thought his career trajectory is in the toilet at this point.
Is she not a Conan fan?
She came in, like, I was watching this and she came in halfway. And then I was at her place, like, I was cat sitting when her cat was sick. So I'm in her apartment watching this Conan movie on Blu-ray. And I said, do you want me to leave the Blu-ray so you can watch the rest? And she goes, no, I'm good. Like, she didn't even care to see the beginning. And it's just. I admire him for doing it. It just, to me, wasn't fun. This was. I'd rather watch 2 hours of Conan's show than another time spin through. Although I have to say, the commentary on the Blu-ray was kind of good.
Okay.
The commentary was actually funnier than
the
dialogue.
So you watched the commentary.
I did get through the commentary because I went, somebody's got to explain this bullshit to me. And the commentary was kind of funny. It is also available instantly on Netflix if you want to check this out. Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
No,
Corey's number
right.
seven.
I loved it. I thought it was funny.
I would have this. I don't really have a category that was my biggest disappointments,
mm-hmm.
but this would probably make it because I thought this movie wasn't very good. All right. Number six for Joel is another science fiction movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you have this on your list. I'm guessing you don't at this point because you probably would have had it lower. But Source Code.
Okay.
By a man named Duncan Jones.
There you go. Who did Moon.
You did a great movie called Moon that probably nobody saw.
Mm-hmm.
But you should, because Moon is great. And Source Code is great. This Duncan Jones is David Bowie's son. And it's Jake Gyllenhaal and Michelle Monaghan on a train in suburban Chicago. And there's a whole lot to it that would be me ruining it. But basically, imagine a Twilight Zone where... The guy can, you have to relive something to get it. I think he's trying to avert a terrorist attack. I saw it in the theater.
The premise has been done before.
The premise has been done. It's very familiar territory for science fiction fans, but God damn it, this is done well. And I also want to give special mention, stand-up comedy is portrayed very well. And it's a spoiler if I were to describe it anymore.
True.
But there's a bit where stand-up comedy is involved, which I really liked the way they used that. And it was very refreshing to see a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, I thought the gimmick was a little too precious, but I did think it was entertaining. It was
right.
Pretty
good.
Right,
this almost does feel like a Twilight Zone. It almost feels like something out of like 60s science fiction sort of transported to modern day. It's not, you know, the biggest budget, highest rent, effect-laden special effects movie you're ever going to see, but it was very charming and it was very tense. And apparently there's going to be a Source Code TV show that they are working on. So the premise of this was real good. And it worked for me. I like that Duncan Jones.
There you go.
Can't wait to see what he's going to do next. So Source Code, again, that's available. I know it's. I don't believe it's available instantly on Netflix, but it is out on Blu-ray and DVD. So check that out. It's a good flick. So, and then sci-fi heavy, this list.
A little bit.
Yeah, for me. I'm just kind of surprised.
You would think I'm the sci-fi wonk, but no.
They made some good sci-fi this year. All right, you got to give me a six.
Number six, Young Adult.
Young Adult. Didn't see it.
New film by Jason Reitman.
Okay.
Now, I know this is going to shock you because it's written by Diablo Cody.
Yep.
And I know you hated Juno.
Yep.
And did you see Jennifer's Body?
Nope.
Okay, good.
Me and the rest of America did not see Jennifer's Body?
I would tell you, if you didn't know it was written by Diablo Cody, you wouldn't. It doesn't have any...
Well, that's a That's high praise.
No, I'm saying it doesn't sound anything like the
sure.
Juno script.
Yeah, and that's a good thing.
And that's a good thing. I might be ranking this a little high.
Yeah.
But it's a tremendous performance by there's a big flaw with the movie.
Mm.
At a certain point in the film, and it doesn't take that all that long, we just decide the lead character is insane.
Okay.
And then we have to sort of wait for her to catch up. So there is kind of a lag where we're waiting for her to kind of have a meltdown and collapse. Yeah. It's brilliantly acted, though. Charlize Theron is terrific. Mm-hmm. Patton Oswalt does a good job.
Okay.
He's like the fat nerd from high school.
Not the fat nerd.
Right, I know.
Patton is the fat nerd.
I know. Who got beat up.
Never tell you the second stuff. Never tell you the story. I took this hot chick out for drinks one night. Not even a date, but she was a friend of a friend. And I took her out for dates.
Not a date.
Well, it wasn't a date because we were leaving something and going to something else. And this chick and I went out for drinks.
Okay.
And she turned to me. And I was really hoping to bang this chick. And she goes, "You remind me a lot of Patton Oswalt." And I knew no pussy was coming my way that night.
That is the no pussy.
That was a no pussy
sentence you can get. And, yeah, no, it's great. Patton, in this movie, he's like an action figure customizer.
Okay.
Where he takes action figures and cuts them into different characters.
Okay.
Which is actually things that go on.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a small town, and it sort of paints a small town realistically in a certain way. She goes home to her small town. She writes a young adult series of books like Sweet Valley High.
Okay.
And the series gets canceled, and then she decides she's got to go home and find her old boyfriend again. But I thought it was really well. It's the only movie I've ever seen that features a Teenage Fan Club song as a plot point.
Okay. Well,
so that's good.
That's good.
It's got a good soundtrack. It's got a good 90s.
Juno kind of ruined the Moldy Peaches for me, just if you want to talk about it.
It's got a good 90s like that, alternative rock soundtrack.
Does it take place in the 90s? Or no,
it's now.
It's now. But
she's looking back on her high school
when
days.
She was young, she was listening to all this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love when people look back, everyone was listening to the coolest music, but at the time, nobody was. Well, you know what I mean? I was. Well, yeah, but we're not everybody.
No.
You know what I mean?
But Bandwagon S was a great record.
It was a good record.
But anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see Young Adult, and I'm hesitant to see it because I fucking hate Juno. But Jason Reitman made Up in the Air, which was great. And
this has a lot.
This has
a lot more in common with Up in the Air than it does.
Well,
Juno.
Then I may check.
It's not excessively cutesy.
Okay.
Like Juno. There's no hamburger phone. There's no Sunny Delight.
let's move on. I can't. If we're talking about Juno, is like fucking sticking a hot poker in my belly.
You know, Juno is the cautionary whale.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move on to my number five. Another documentary.
Okay.
This one also on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that this played theatrically. And, you know, probably shouldn't have, because I think in totality, this thing was like 3.5 hours long. I'm more leaning towards the first part. This aired on PBS not too long ago as part of American Masters. But Woody Allen, a documentary.
See, you're doing fantastic. Stuff that wasn't theatrically released.
But it was released. It was a movie that was released in 2011.
Well, but see, I didn't know that was the rule.
Well,
I'm
making up the rules.
I'm saying my
What have you seen that wasn't theatrical that you liked anyway?
I love that Woody Allen.
Yeah, it was great. Put it on your fucking list. Don't be a baby.
Well, but I didn't, but I'm saying.
I
thought
when
I made
the
list, asshole, I was thinking theatrical.
Well, okay. I mean, whatever. The point is that when they make these movies, they don't even know where they're going to air most of the time anyway.
Okay.
Sometimes they get bought for theatrical. Sometimes they get bought for television.
I might have included the Marinovich Project, which was an ESPN movie.
Well, you had that in your best TV, and we counted that there. But this Woody Allen documentary, because for me, and I love Woody Allen. And
Prohibition was really good. The Ken Burns documentary.
I didn't see that, but that was more of a miniseries. And this Woody Allen thing was a movie, I guess. I mean, it was in two parts. I thought the second part wasn't as good.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of, you know, him on the set today, and it was not all that great. But the footage of him.
You're telling me Scarlett Johansson's insights didn't...
Yeah, all that stuff, yeah. Wasn't great. But when you see him boxing a kangaroo on some TV show in the early 60s, I mean, it was great. It was It's tremendous. I mean, if you love Woody Allen, to hear him talk candidly about his... Because he doesn't give a lot of interviews.
No.
So this movie was very interesting just in hearing what he has to say and going through his whole career and seeing all the great behind-the-scenes footage where he grew up. All that stuff, to me, was great. And I love Woody Allen. And if you don't like Woody Allen, I'm not saying you'd love this, But this was one of the best, you know, when I think about my heroes and who I like, this is maybe the best documentary. Like, the Beatles anthology is awesome, too. But to me, this was maybe the best documentary about a guy I really like that I've ever seen. So,
okay,
this is great.
That's a good, good, it was good.
Yeah.
Solid. I mean, even when the second part, when they get into what a skeeze he was.
Well, that's mentioned,
they don't get into it as much.
I wish they might have. That might be a flaw in it, is that they could have done more on that.
Well, I think the problem with it is that they had to get access to Woody.
Oh, yeah, and there's lots of access.
And so to get access to Woody, they didn't probe him on the Mia situation as much. Yeah. Or Mia didn't do it.
Yeah.
They didn't interview her.
They didn't interview Mia. That is unlike the Foo Fighters movie where they interviewed everybody.
Right.
A lot of the, you know, some people that Woody doesn't associate with anymore.
But they interviewed Louise Lasser and Diane Keaton, but they're on good terms with him.
Right.
Mia's not in good terms.
And there's a first wife that's somewhere you never see. But
so,
but if you like Woody Allen on any level, watch this movie. Great. I don't know where you see this now.
I would say Crumb is one of my favorite documentaries about somebody I respected. That's a great doc. All right, fine. I didn't know non-theatrical were in the list.
I'm just saying. You can count. Now you'll know in the future.
Fine.
You can count things that
All right, let's move it along.
Movies, but not. Okay, give me a number five.
My number five might as well not have been theatrical, considering how little it played. But terrific movie, Take Shelter.
Take Shelter. I don't know anything about it.
Michael Shannon is the star of this film.
Okay.
Who is the leading, I would say he's the new Walken in terms of when you absolutely have to positively get a guy to play a creep.
Yes.
And a weirdo and a nuts, a schizo. Michael Shannon is the go-to guy.
Yeah, he's great in Boardwalk Empire, which we talked
about.
It's my best TV of the year. So
he's going to be in the new Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael Shannon, terrific. It's about a guy who is like a contractor in Ohio. He like works on a rig drilling wells on a crew, who starts kind of slowly going crazy, and his family has a history of mental health problems. And he starts imagining that this giant cataclysmic storm is coming. And Jessica Chastain is in it. She was in every movie made this year.
She was in every movie.
She really was. She was in like five movies this year. And she shot them all like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I said The Help was delayed a year. Right. The debt was delayed a year.
Right. She shot a bunch of stuff in 2008, and it all finally dropped this year. Mm-hmm. She's his wife. Another great performance from her. She's the tits.
Yeah.
Literally. But Take Shelter's great, and then he starts building a bunker. He starts building a like fallout shelter in their backyard, and takes out a loan, and his life starts to unravel. Great, just intensely acted thriller. You don't know if it's real or not, if he's going crazy, if he's in a dream. Awesome, intelligent, brilliantly acted film.
All right, I haven't seen this. It comes out February 14th on DVD and Blu-ray. So if you haven't had a chance, and again, Corey's like, it didn't play anywhere.
It played here literally at the one theater for a week.
Yeah. And that theater is closed now.
No.
No, not that one, the other one. But yeah, it's coming out February 14th. It's already in my Netflix queue. So Take Shelter, I'll check that out. And the Woody Allen movie, I don't know anything about where you can see that now. PBS may be replaying that, and I'm guessing it'll show up somewhere.
PBS does put their stuff out eventually on video, but they are a little sketchy about when they replay stuff.
The Pearl Jam doc that was on American Masters came out immediately on DVD.
Gotcha.
As did, I think, the Lennon one from last year, which was the John Lennon one that was on American Masters. That was real good.
Was that American Masters?
The Lennon NYC.
The Woody Allen one?
The Woody Allen was American Masters, too. Okay. Yeah. So, but again, you know, they buy these things later and call them American Masters. But anyway. So Take Shelter's out February 14th.
Right.
You can see that. My number four movie is called Hannah.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen Hannah yet?
I didn't actually see Hannah.
Because I know they sent you a copy for review purposes, and you never watched it.
I know.
It's fucking great.
I heard it's great.
It's like the Bourne Identity with like a teenage girl, which doesn't sound great, but it's really nice, and it's really well done, and it's different from really anything you've seen, because it's like, it's just fluid. The whole movie is just like moving camera, and this girl's running and avoiding people, and the Chemical Brothers did the score, and it's this real cool, like, it's just, and it's all in
like
Europe.
Run Lola Run kind of?
Kind of, yeah. It's just really neat. It's a little like, the style's different. It's just, you know, it's just really well done. Cate Blanchett is an assassin, which is, again, you're going like, what the fuck is that? You got to see Hannah, though. It's really great. It's unique. I saw this movie in March or April this thing came out. And it kind of, I think a lot of people forgot about it.
I know everybody loved Hannah, and
I
didn't see it.
Came out and you never saw it. And
here's what happens
should've.
With me. I see so many movies that sometimes I'll miss a screening, and I won't get around
and
to it.
And you'll never, ever see it.
Right. It's just because I know, because I got to watch three more next
week.
Yeah,
well, you've got Hannah sitting at home, so.
I'll watch it.
We're going to be shoveling snow for the next 2 days.
You betcha.
So there's a chance to catch up with Hannah. Let me see. And I guess Hannah is out. Let me just check the Netflix here just to make sure that people.
Checking.
I think it's been out. See, I didn't rent it or anything because I saw it. I thought I saw it at press screening, actually, or early screening. Yeah, Hannah's been out for a while. It's got real good reviews on Netflix, DVD, and Blu-ray.
That is
Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, she's got the weirdest Irish name.
Yeah, and this is the director of Atonement, Joan Wright. Joe Wright.
You would look at it and you go, you think that name would be Cerise.
Yeah.
But it's like Saoirse.
It's Welsh. Saoirse. Is it Welsh? Is
yeah, she's Irish.
Yeah, Irish, something like that.
Yeah, if you hear it, well, Celtic, you know.
Yeah, Eric Bana is her dad, and he trained. It's great. I wish I could say more about it, but it's one of these movies that it's like low concept but high intensity when you see it.
All right.
Very simple in its premise.
Is it really? Does it have a kind of a Bourne feel, like a Greenglass, Paul Greenglass?
It does, yeah, vibe? A little bit, sure. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Absolutely, but it's great. Hannah, it's
okay.
Unique. You don't see stuff like this all the time. So you got to give me a number four.
Number four on my old list here is The Artist.
The Artist.
Thanks, everybody. I'll be here all week. Thank you.
The Artist.
No, The Artist is everybody's loving it right now.
The rubber stamp of critical approval.
It kind of is getting.
But I haven't seen it, so I can't, couldn't even consider it for my time.
Well, I will. You'll get a copy. It's tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
The actor just won. The Golden Globe.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, people saw the Globes. They were all over
Dujardin.
Yeah.
My fear with The Artist is that no one will remember it in a year and a half.
Oh, well.
It's kind of, it's just fun.
Yeah.
And I don't even like silent movies that much.
Right.
Actually, this movie feels more like a 30s musical than a silent film in the way it uses music and it kind of uses, but they play around with it. It's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They really play with the premise. They take the premise as far as it can go in terms of a gimmick. It's basically A Star Is Born. You know, it's this guy who's a big, huge matinee idol as a silent film star. And then the talkies come in and he doesn't want to do it.
Mm.
He's resistant and he wants to keep doing things the way that he did them. And the girl that he gave a break to becomes a big star while he falls in the toilet. But it's just goddamned fun.
I haven't seen it.
It's a fun movie that John Goodman's in it.
Okay.
And what's great is you see John Goodman bellowing, you screaming at the top of his lip, but you don't hear him the whole movie. And you're like, you can hear John Goodman in your head. It plays tricks on you.
Yeah.
So it's worth the hype. It's good.
Okay.
Check out The Artist.
It won the Golden Globe for best.
Much like
comedy or musical,
much like Hugo, it's a movie about movies and kind of a tribute.
Sure, yeah, it's a tribute
to the old
to
world
the
of
old
movies,
days.
But it's fun.
Mm.
A lot of fun.
All right. Well, my number three movie is also a tribute, in some way, to old movies, but not movies going back to the '20s or the '30s. It's more of a throwback to the '70s and the '80s, and that is called Super 8.
Okay.
Which was J.J. Abrams' big summer thing, and I was thinking back on this, and I go, God, maybe I like this movie. Maybe this was the movie that I had the most fun watching. Although it's the negative might be that it's so wraps up like every Spielberg 80s movie that it's not as great.
I think the ending kind of squashed
it. It might be, but I mean, I describe this as E.T. meets Cloverfield. And you can also throw Goonies in there and a lot of just great, you know, it's a group of kids. Running, I mean, and sort of Attack the Block is like that too,
right?
Where you get a group of kids trying to confront an alien, and you know, it's great. And of course, you know, the dad is distant. You always have that in these movies. And what isn't that the story where the mom dies? What was the story in Super 8? The mom had just died.
It's got a very Spielbergian.
Yeah,
sort of,
it's very Spielbergian. Kids are riding their bikes.
Two sets
all
of
over.
Parents with like, they have one parent apiece.
Yeah,
it's like two single dads.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very Spielberg. Everything about it is Spielberg.
It really reeks of Spielberg. But you know what? In a great way. I thought this was a lot of fun. these kids are kids who are trying to make a movie. So you have that sort of movie inside a movie thing. And the credits, probably the best credits of the year, I think we can
all
agree.
Those credits are terrific.
Credits are great. So Super 8's just a lot of fun. And
Boy, you know, I feel
I really liked it.
That I kind of forgot Super 8.
Did you forget Super 8?
And left it off my list. It is a good movie. I think the ending is a little...
People loved it when it came out, and then it kind of went and...
Fell off the screen.
People kind of... And it's out on DVD now, so if you want to go see Super 8, it's definitely worth watching, so...
Yeah, is that Elle Fanning in that? Is it the younger Fanning?
Yeah, I think it's the younger Fanning.
She's good.
Yeah, she's real good. That whole cast of kids is great.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they have the funny fat kid. They got that in
welcome,
there.
Welcome back to show business, Ron Livingston.
Yeah, there you go.
Or no, wait, no, not Ron
Livingston. Not Ron Livingston. Who are you talking
about? Ron Ellie? Ron, is that what he is?
Ron, who are you referring to?
The dad.
The dad of the girl.
Her, the dad of the girl.
Yeah, that's, who is that? That's a guy.
He was on sitcoms and then fell off the face of the earth. Let me look him up. Oh, God damn. Listen to us. Look at the internet.
No, but Super 8 is great. It's out, like I said, it's out now on DVD.
Ron Ellard.
Ron Ellard, yeah, you have to see him.
Who was in the American version of Men Behaving Badly.
Oh, okay.
And, I don't know, I guess he's been doing stuff, but he, you know.
You don't see him in much, and you don't see him as a dad, maybe. That's why,
yeah.
Yeah, anyway, go see Super 8. If you have any sense of, you know. You'd have to really be, you'd really have to have a tight asshole to not enjoy Super 8. You know what I mean? Like, you'd really have to really, like.
Well, you know what? I think we ought to do a study. And ladies, ladies, if you think you have a tight asshole,
yeah,
we'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, 610-552-0746.
That's right. Send us your messages.
Email at CoreyandJoelRadio.com.
If you have pictures of your tight asshole.
You can send a message right to the front page.
Show what you do is you show us your tight asshole and then watch Super 8 and then tell
and then
us.
Take before and after. Take one before Super 8.
Or you can come to the studio and we'll do a
we'll do a test. We'll see how far the Sharpie goes in.
Scientifically.
Oh, you're disgusting.
I'm a gross.
Yeah, horrible.
Dragging the show down.
Yeah, Super 8's good though. Yeah, I loved it.
You know, kind of an oversight on my part. I forgot about it.
Well, if you like Attack the Block, you're right there.
Yeah.
You're right there. Yeah, same shit.
So. I think it's better than Attack the Block, kind of.
It's better in that this movie, it was shot for $100 million on Attack the Block.
Right, which cost
which
nothing.
Was a shoestring budget, but does great with the money that they spent. So.
It, boy, it does really look like 1979.
It does. It is period West Virginia or whatever it is, Ohio.
Yeah, like Eastern Pennsylvania.
Western Pennsylvania. Yeah, okay. All right, give me a number three, Corey.
My number three is Moneyball.
Moneyball.
I know, it's kind of boring. That's the movie everybody likes.
It's the movie everybody likes, and I have it on my...
Honorable mention list?
Honorable mentions, and then subcategoried good but overrated subcategory. But you review Moneyball, and then I'll say what I got to say.
You could make an argument that it was overrated. It was originally supposed to be directed by Steven Soderbergh, and I'd like to see what he would have done with it.
Yeah.
To me, it had a great, great script by Aaron Sorkin.
Right.
Aaron Sorkin, goddamn. I mean, you want to hate the guy, but he much like The Social Network, he writes these really, really smart scripts that don't... sometimes they stand out as being a smartly written script.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just kind of roll in a way. And Moneyball rolls in a really engaging way. It's just kind of a classical throwback kind of movie.
Well, yeah. It's the underdog story. Because you have this, you know, the team of misfits gets to, you know, it's the fish that saved Pittsburgh, you know, it's, you know, but it's a great, it's a really good movie.
I think it's a movie more about failure than it is about success to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I think it's a movie more about reconciling that you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
And you know, Brad Pitt is Billy Bean, who was supposed to be a great ball player and never was.
Former Detroit Tiger.
Right. And Jonah Hill's good in it. Philip Seymour Hoffman is great as the coach.
As the coach, yeah.
But he's got, like, you know, he's got a very little screen time.
Yeah, he's not in it.
But he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
If you like baseball, it's got a great hook for baseball fans.
Right.
You don't have to know anything about baseball to enjoy the movie.
Yeah, my girlfriend doesn't know baseball at all, and she really liked this more than I did. So.
Yeah. And it's just, it felt classical to me. It felt classic and had a kind of a timeless sort of vibe. I thought it was a terrific flim.
Yeah, I liked it. Flim. Flounder. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a little overrated because I didn't like Social Network. If you remember last year when we did this, I was like, Social Network's a waste of fucking time. Don't worry about it. And I actually think that, I think history...
I forgot how wrong you were then, sir.
I think history is sure to prove me right. I don't think anyone likes Social Network anymore. I think people did that. I think it was a fad. People were into Facebook. Like, this must be an important movie because Facebook is changing the world. Mm. And the bottom line is that Facebook really hasn't changed all that much of the world, and that movie really wasn't as good. My problem with Social Network is that everybody in that movie was an asshole.
Right.
And yeah, you were rooting for one asshole to win over the other assholes, but they were all assholes. In Moneyball, there's people you actually like, and you do root for them, so it's a better movie in that way. Again, I'm not dissing it. I liked it.
I think that's what I liked about Social Network.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a movie without heroes.
Yeah.
And that was one without heroes.
But yeah. Anyway. But Moneyball does have people you like, you do root for, and it's good. I mean, it's real, and they're trying, the authenticity that they tried to portray in this is real good, where they would actually cut between the real A's games and the ones that, you know, with the actors, and you couldn't tell one from the other. So they did a really nice job with this. I mean, it's a fun movie. You know, I thought it was a little long. I thought there was a lot of, you know, a lot of those scenes could have been chopped up, and you know, it would have been the same goddamn movie, just 20 minutes shorter. But Moneyball's good. I can't fault you for liking
it. Well,
I liked it too. But
when I thought back on it, I felt Moneyball will probably last for a while. You know what I mean? Yeah. It'll be a movie people...
It's accessible in a way some of these... The artist maybe isn't.
You know, there's
something.
Just something about... There's some movies that when you see them on first blush, you might go, oh, that was okay, that was good. But it sticks around. It's in your skin.
Right.
It's a movie other people reference and remember.
Yeah.
And I think Moneyball had that vibe.
Yeah, it might be that. It might be one of those. It might be one of those that... By the way, I saw... Because you told me to watch this when Moneyball came out and I hadn't seen it until I saw Moneyball last week on Blu-ray. But... Millenball, the parody that's on Funny or Die, which just a couple of yokels made in Detroit. I thought, see, when you told me, I assumed somebody in Hollywood had made that, like one of those.
No.
One of those.
I mean, it's only like six minutes. But.
Yeah, but it was made by guys, and Sean Belizean's in it, from who's a local radio guy that we listen to. Yeah, Millenball is a real funny, but you really do have to see Moneyball to get Millenball, and you got to know how bad the Lions suck.
Right.
And references to, you know, Aquila Lima Francis or whatever.
Ike Lima Francis.
Ike Lima Francis. There's a lot of really funny references, but it's so inside, but it does work. So I mean, Moneyball, again, I think that's why a parody of it works, is that they did create these iconic sort of scenes where, you know, Billy Bean is ordering around his assistant and stuff, and their discussions. It's all the President's Men. Is that safe to say? It's in that structure where, you know, every movie about a thing sort of followed that narrative, I think, a little bit.
I think I think Moneyball set kind of a different vibe for a sports movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It did.
It's not as jocular as some of the,
No, it's more cerebral than a lot of sports movies, even though it is kind of based on the sports movie cliche of we're going to be the underdog that triumphs. But they don't.
Am I ruining it to say that they don't?
They don't necessarily triumph.
They don't necessarily triumph as far as you think, but they triumph.
Right.
So small triumphs. All right. So I've done, that was your three. My two was Hugo. So let's get a two from you.
Number two, and you're not going to like this either.
Uh-oh.
Was a movie that you hated.
Oh, no.
Called The Trip.
Oh, my God. No. You're on a goddamn trip right now. Putting that at number two.
What?
That's better than Hugo.
Yeah.
That's better than Super 8. That's better than Attack the Block.
Super 8 probably would have bumped something off.
Oy,
all right, maybe Submarine might have.
Explain people what The Trip is, because I don't know if we've. Did we discuss this on the show? I know I yelled at you privately about The Trip, which, by the way, I didn't hate.
Okay.
I actually liked The Trip.
All right.
But this in the top. There was 80,000 movies better than this year, but go ahead.
I didn't laugh more at any of them than I did at The Trip. The Trip was directed by Michael Winterbottom, who's one of my favorite directors.
Okay.
Michael Winterbottom is a tremendous director, did 24-hour Party People.
I'm Michael Winterbottom. Here's the camera. I'm going to set this down and go have a glass of wine.
I think it's better than you think it is.
You guys do. Explain what these guys do. Explain.
All right. It's a movie that's kind of meta in that Steve Coogan plays himself.
Uh-huh.
But he's playing sort of the exaggerated version of Steve Coogan. And he is asked to write an article for a magazine where he tours a bunch of restaurants in the Midlands and the North Country in England. A bunch of fancy, high-end, hip restaurants that are at inns. Well, his girlfriend has broken up with him and moved to New York or is on hiatus. So he has to call his friend, Rob Brydon, who's a comedian, and they go on the...
If you don't know who Rob Brydon is, if you know who Steve Coogan is...
Right.
Yeah, put it on a Xerox machine and run it off, and there's Rob Brydon. It's the same...
Well, Rob Brydon was in a movie...
Rob Brydon was in a movie that none of another movie that none of you saw that you would have liked.
But you know what?
Look, he's famous in England from being on the radio or on TV or something.
He's an impressionist.
And he's talented. I can't fault the guy, but he's, you know.
What? It's a great movie.
This movie is, remember when you and I would do drive-through theater? That's what, this is the feature film version of that. It's two guys sitting around eating pasta, drinking wine. And doing Woody Allen, dueling Woody Allen impressions.
And that's why it's great.
You know what? Listen. Look, I think it's one of those things where we both agree it is what it is. You just enjoy it more than me.
Okay.
It's one of those movies that, you know, no one can say, you know. It's not like it's not a movie that you don't get. I don't think. I think you get it, and just some people don't like it.
All right. I thought it was really funny. Okay. I laughed hard at it. It's a very subtle. It's a very subtle. Cerebral movie, but that's kind of my style. I'm pretentious as fuck. I wasn't pretentious enough to love Tree of Life as much as some people did, but
Well, I would say this about The Trip. It's almost, it's, I don't know if you can call it faux documentary, because I don't think they ever, or semi-documentary. Right. I don't know what you would call this stuff. It's not quite like Curb Your Enthusiasm, Office sort of thing, but it's not... They don't ever really break the fourth wall,
I would say Curb Your Enthusiasm is a good reference that it is... It's about Steve Coogan and what a miserable kind of shit he is.
They don't do direct address ever, do they?
They don't look right in the camera.
Yeah, they don't, but...
But it is documentary style, almost. Yeah. And it is mostly these guys driving around, but they're trying... Okay, maybe this appealed to me as a comedian, and you've gone on road trips with other comics, right?
Yeah.
It felt like being in the car with a comic going on a long road trip.
Yeah.
And what happens is other comedians, and Joel and I have done this every week for 6 years, trying to do this as a podcast. Right. We sit and we try and one-up each other.
Yeah.
And to me, that's hysterically funny and interesting. And it gets into the weird dynamic where they're trying to be friends and competitive with each other.
Yeah.
And Coogan, to me, is like the British Albert Brooks in his persona.
Yeah.
Maybe not in his filmmaking skill, but as is in that Albert Brooks plays the character of Albert Brooks in other movies. Yeah. In which he's kind of a...
Yeah, Woody Allen, same thing.
Right, right. Where they're more neurotic and schleppy versions of themselves who are very conscious of what everybody else thinks of them and don't exist unless someone's looking at them and then hate other people who look at them. So I love this movie. I'm sure I'm all alone. Hey, it was on Entertainment Weekly.
People liked it. I mean, it got good reviews from some people. So
Owen Gleiberman had it on his top 10 list.
Oh, okay, that's fine. I mean, listen, again, I don't think it's a movie you can argue about what it is. It's just as much as you might enjoy two guys who you may or may not be familiar with,
right,
doing dueling Michael Caine impressions over dinner, and you know they do. That's funny, but there's a lack of content maybe in this that bothered me. I like those guys. I like what they did. I wish there was more of a movie that featured that. Than what is actually there.
Well, it is kind of...
There's not a lot of tension. There's not a lot of...
Not a hell of a lot of narrative.
There's not rising action, falling action. It's just the guys go out on a trip, they come back, it's over.
Well, you know what? And you know what? And here I'm showing my bias as a film critic a little bit. Much like Tree of Life didn't have a narrative, this has a narrative, but it's not a... you know what I liked about it? It's not plot-driven.
That's true.
I watch so many movies every week, and they go... We've got to get to this place in time to do this.
Right.
Or we've got to find this diamond and return it so I can clear my name.
Yeah.
Right?
And then your mind tries to figure out where it's going and
this,
you know, you try
doesn't
to
doesn't have any we know they're going to go from restaurant to restaurant and eventually they'll get out of the car.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a narrative structure that way.
Yeah.
And you know what? neither does life.
Like, you're kind of expecting that they're going to run into zombies or something, and they never do.
They never
they
do.
They just keep going from restaurant
to
restaurant.
No, they go from restaurant to restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, Coogan picks up chicks on the road.
Yeah.
Bryden's like a married family guy, and he hates him for being a married family guy. It's great. It's a funny movie.
You know, I don't hate. I didn't hate the trip, but I did. I did. Yeah, I had high expectations based on your review. I got this for a date night with me and my girlfriend, and God damn it, if she didn't hate this. Well, so,
if you're a British, if you're a Britophile like me,
Anglophile, but,
an Anglophile.
She is not, and didn't enjoy this. So,
but I would say Michael Winterbottom has made all kinds of crazy movies. I mean, he can do just about any kind of genre. 24-Hour Party People.
That was good.
The Killer Inside Me. In this world, he does Tristram Shandry, which was also Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon.
Okay.
Where that was the making of a movie inside a movie.
I saw that Rob Brydon wrote a book.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the balls to actually read that, but I saw that it was available.
So anyway, go check out The Trip if you want. It's also actually, there's a longer version of The Trip.
Oh, no, a longer version.
Because this is actually the edited together version
this
of
like
a
like an international
television.
Version?
There's a television series.
Oh, by the way, just an update. This is available on Netflix.
What's the rating?
It's got a 4.5 out of 5.
Thank you.
Well, I haven't given it my 3-star review. Let me add that in there. But it's available instant streaming as well. So if you want to watch this. If you want to watch this and be able to turn it off without having to drive back to Redbox. Instant streaming on
Folks,
Netflix.
It's not my fault that Joel is uncultured.
Look,
4.5 out of 5 on Netflix.
It's pretty good. Yeah, but it probably has been rented by 10 Anglophiles. You know what I mean? The trip was okay. It was fine. It's not. Look.
If you like Ricky Gervais, it does have some of that vibe. If you like
Ricky Gervais, he's not in it. If you like,
I'm saying if you like the stuff he does, if you like Larry David, it's kind of another take on that.
I get where you're going with it.
All right,
it's way overrated, Corey. If this was the NFL draft, you reached at number two. You reached at number two for The Trip. Okay,
I'm gonna tell you something. In my fantasy draft, I took a young quarterback. Named Matthew Stafford out of Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Plays for a little team called the Detroit Lions.
The Detroit Lions.
Took him in the 3rd round.
Yeah.
And they all laughed at me. They all went, "You're a dummy. Yeah. Why would you do that? Why would you jump in the 3rd round and draft Matthew Stafford?" All Stafford did was throw for 5,000 yards and 40-plus touchdowns and put up like 35 points a week for me.
Yeah.
And they all sucked it. Yeah. So there you go. What's your number two, Joel?
No, my number two is Hugo. So I think I can give my number one.
All right. Hit the drum roll.
Let me ready for drum roll.
Can we get a drum roll, please?
Can I get a drum roll for my number one? I think you saw. I know you saw this. So I'm not going to any wacky documentary. I'm not picking some Spanish movie. My number one movie, the best film of 2011... is a little movie. Might have been the first movie I saw in 2011, believe it or not. It's called Win-Win with Paul Giamatti.
It's a good film.
Yeah, Win-Win was this little movie that came out. God, I should have researched. Let me get a little research here, cuz I didn't write that. But Paul Giamatti stars as this guy who's he's a lawyer, but his business is going under. He's a wrestling coach on a team. Some reason he has to take in this kid that is, what is the connection? It's his wife's nephew or something? Who is this kid they take in? Anyway, he takes this kid in, throws him on the wrestling team. It's just this really great indie comedy drama. Thomas McCarthy directed this, who's he's an actor mainly, but he made some other good movies, right? He made... The Station Agent, I think, is this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's made some other good movies. Amy Ryan, Bobby Cannavale, especially great in this as sort of his funny sidekick. Jeffrey Tambor, Burt Young. They dragged Burt Young out of his Rocky purgatory after 30 fucking years and gave him a role.
Mm-hmm.
That it's great. I'm just reading the cast, going, yeah, what a great movie that was. Win-Win.
I'm gonna apologize because I think 50-50 bumped Win-Win off my
list.
But I liked Win-Win a lot.
Yeah, Win-Win was great.
And you know what? I probably could have squeezed it on here.
Right.
Over a couple of my more extravagant choices. Maybe Limitless could have got bumped. But 50 Win-Win is really good. It's you know what? There's nothing to say about it.
Yeah,
it's that good.
It's great. It's one of those things that, you know, Tree of Life tries harder and does, but this movie does what it does perfectly,
mm-hmm.
Wherein something like Tree of Life sort of fails to make that connection.
Right.
Or tries to hit that, or Moneyball, where I didn't think it quite worked, or Hugo maybe was boring to some people. This win-win, it's
a small scale.
Tick every box. It hits, you know.
It's small scale, much like Cedar Rapids, and much
Cedar
like
Cedar Rapids was like
much
this.
Like 50-50.
Again,
although 50-50 is about life or death, but yeah. This is small
right.
scale.
If you liked, I mean, to bring up Alexander Payne, if you like Sideways,
yeah.
It's not the same guy from Sideways Paul Giamatti's playing, but it has that vibe. It's realistic. It's gritty. Mm-hmm. It's not depressing. It is you know, a happy. This movie is quirky, according to Netflix, which I guess it's quirky, but it also says if you liked, oh, it's recommended to me because I liked Little Miss Sunshine, Up in the Air, and Crazy Stupid Love.
None of those are off the beat for Win-Win.
Nah, Win-Win's great, so I'm giving it a 5-star
Crazy Stupid
review.
Love, honorable mention.
Yeah, I have that in my honorable mentions. We'll get to that after number
right.
one, but I just gave it a 5-star review on Win-Win. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray. It's rated R, but a teenager could watch this, too. Might be bored with it, but this is great. You want a good date movie? You want a good date movie? This is it right here.
Yeah, your wife
you want
will probably
a date
like
movie?
That. Your wife or girlfriend will
you
like
want,
that.
Your
sure.
girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever you got. Win-Win's a great movie. So go see it. My best movie. Oscar, do you think this movie never came out?
No. Well,
you think that nothing about this...
This movie came out...
In like February
in
or
like
March or
March
something.
March
yeah.
of 2011.
Yeah.
And that's what does it to
yep.
you. It came out early in the year. Yeah. It's a terrific little picture, but it's gonna get it completely ignored.
That's too not on this show.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I mean,
why
look at
this
50-50 came out yeah. in like September, and that's
right.
out of the window.
Yeah.
So you got to really be in a tight little window. And if you have a tight little window, please send your pictures to 610-552-0746.
All right, that was my number one. There's my 15. Corey, give us your number one, and then we'll get
my number one.
Hold on, don't give it yet. Because you need to get the drum roll.
You just mentioned the director of this film.
Oh, Alexander Payne. I'm
The Descendants.
The Descendants.
Terrific film.
It won the Golden Globe for drama,
yep.
which is weird because the artist is in its own category, so only one of them is going to win
right.
the Best Picture Oscar. But I haven't seen Descendants, and I like Alexander Payne a lot. So
It's not as funny as Election
right.
Or Sideways, mm-hmm. but it's... really well done. It does have funny stuff in it. It's got a cast you would kill for. It's a tremendous cast from top to bottom. Robert Forster is in this movie.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right.
Robert Forster is always awesome.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino gave him a career again with Jackie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
But terrific. Clooney is great in it, being Clooney. Clooney's so good that you kind of forget he's good.
yeah.
Right? He's a movie.
Right, yeah.
Clooney's a movie star, and he makes shit look effortless.
Yeah.
And he's good in this. It's just a terrific movie. It's a real movie. It's heartfelt. It's about what people's lives are really like. There's a subplot that maybe doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
But, or doesn't pay off the way you kind of think it's going to. But Judy Greer is in like two scenes and shreds it. Just
all right.
kicks ass.
Judy Greer.
This movie's so good, Matt Lillard is good in it.
Oh, my goodness.
That's never happened ever. No one's ever said.
This is like, you're saying a lot of things that are true of Win-Win, too. You know what I mean? Like there's,
yeah, right.
Melanie Lynskey's in two scenes in Win-Win, and she's great. You know, like it's
Melanie Lynskey was in legitimately a great movie.
Matt Lillard never.
No.
Okay.
Melanie Lynskey was
but
in
you were saying about,
she was in Heavenly Creatures.
Right, but you were saying about
but, yeah.
I was pointing more into Judy Greer. But anyway, go ahead.
No, right. Judy Greer is always the wacky best friend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But well, she's in Adaptation.
Okay.
But
right.
you know, she's done a couple good movies, but Judy Greer is really good in this.
Okay.
In a limited sequence. It's a really cool movie. It makes Hawaii look awesome.
No.
I know.
Guy's a miracle worker, that Alexander.
Well, you know, it's funny, though. They do kind of show the dumpier kind of everyday side
sure.
of Honolulu.
The dog, the bounty hunter side of Honolulu.
Yeah, a little bit.
yeah.
They show a little bit of that, but it also, you know, it's Hawaii. You can't hide what it is. You know, like they go on vacation to the other island,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, you know, and then you're like, right. holy shit.
Yeah.
The Descendant, it's a terrific movie. It's a little, it might be a little moody. It might not be for everybody's taste. Mm.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I feel bad because it's something I should have seen. But the stuff that came out theatrically towards the end of the year, I didn't really see.
I'll tell you what, The Descendants, it's not showy
yeah.
in a way that a lot of movies are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I loved about it. And maybe, you know what, I admit wholeheartedly, you might watch these movies and want to kick me in the sack. But
I think I would like Descendants. I'm not worried about that. It's a good recommendation. So, the Trip can suck a nut.
Oh, how dare you.
All right.
The Trip's a fine.
All right. Let me do some honorable mentions, and you feel free to shout any out. We've mentioned a few of these. I also like Limitless. Captain America was very good. My Week with Marilyn was a good movie, but it's also one of those movies that's so good and well made that you expect it, you know what I mean? It didn't blow you away.
It didn't have an extra gear.
It didn't, yeah. It was, look, when you're using Judi Dench for like two scenes or, you know, 3 minutes, you know, it's got, you check all the boxes. And if you like that kind of movie, you would like My Week with
Michelle
Marilyn.
Williams is good in it.
Right.
Really good.
Not in my top 15, but it was a good movie. Contagion was a great half a movie.
Meh.
The first half of Contagion, to me, the way the virus spread was maybe the best movie of the year. The end, not so great. But, hey.
Contagion is getting better the farther I get from it.
Yeah.
It seems better. But
right, yeah.
I kind of had problems with it.
Well,
the time.
They go with such a realistic way that it spreads. They have to come up with a realistic solution instead of a sci-fi solution.
Sure.
Which is what most movies would do, which would make it more fun than sort of, not to ruin Contagion, but... Hey, we got a cure and we fixed everybody.
There's only so much you can do with laboratory science.
Yeah, it's sort of the falling action is not as fun. And then I have just good movies, comedies. I had Bridesmaids as being a good comedy. Nothing I had was like a true comedy in my top 15, I don't think. But, you know, Cedar Rapids was good. Bridesmaids was good. Hangover 2 I thought was good. I know I'm probably you're not joining me on that one. 30 Minutes or Less was pretty good. I know that one was not a big hit, but that was a funny comedy. Horrible Bosses was good.
Nah.
Crazy Stupid Love almost made my top 15, but that's an odd movie.
Yeah,
Crazy Stupid Love.
It's got a little fat around the edges.
It almost feels like European in a sense. It's sort of a little off base from like a typical Hollywood movie, which makes it good. But then at the same time, it's maybe a little too long. There's a twist that sort of, there's more than one twist, but sort of the major
twist.
That
twist got me.
I will not ruin this. If I ruin Hugo or something, I apologize, but I'm not going to ruin Crazy Stupid Love for you. But there was something when I saw the trailer, I went like, oh, you know, this person sort of, and then, you know what I mean? It's a weird movie, but those guys are good directors. What are those guys' names? Because they also made a movie from my last year's list, I Love You, Philip Morris.
I can't think of the guys' names.
It's two guys, though. They're a team. They're like the Coen brothers.
I'm sorry. I'm blanking on their names.
But it's John Fuqua and somebody else. I forget their names. But Crazy Stupid Love's a neat movie, so I thought that was...
enjoyable. Yeah.
Enjoyable. If I can do good but overrated, that's where I said I had Moneyball. Midnight in Paris.
Okay.
Good, but, I mean, people are calling that number one.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen Midnight in Paris?
Here's what I haven't seen it.
Okay.
I've seen every Woody Allen movie for the last decade.
Hey, Corey, you've seen Midnight in Paris.
Right.
It's literally like, my feeling is when they take a movie like this, and this movie has a, this is a movie that has a message, Corey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the character learns something about life by the end of Midnight in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that is as deep as the kiddie pool. His life lesson, you know what I mean? And you've seen The Purple Rose of Cairo?
Yeah, sure.
You've more or less seen Midnight in Paris. It's not that different. It's good. I'm not saying it's bad. This is a movie not unlike Hugo where they, you know, this movie they actually do put, you know, all these historical figures in that Owen Wilson's running around meeting. And here they actually identify... Yeah, I can't believe you're Ernest Hemingway, so you don't have to do too much legwork to figure out who's who.
Right.
But sometimes it's
a little...
Oh, my
God, it's Alice B. Toklas.
It's a little...
Oh.
Sometimes it's a little too obvious. Mm-hmm. But they're like Josephine Baker's dancing around, they don't really identify her. But you know what I mean? It's a good movie, but you think...
Zelda Fitzgerald is hitting on me.
People that love this must have never seen a movie. I liked it a lot.
People who love this are going to die soon.
They're about to leave. But how about Alison Pill as Zelda Fitzgerald? How about that?
Really?
Yeah, Alison Pill.
Well, I do love me some Alison Pill.
Yeah, Alison Pill's all
who
right.
Who was in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
She's great, and she was good in this. Mm-hmm. Also good but overrated. Again, this is something my cousin, who's like, I think a 25-year-old girl, came up to me and said, you got to see this. It's great. And she says, Warrior, you have to see it. It's great. I saw Warrior. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Good movie, but wasn't great.
Nick Nolte's great.
Nick Nolte's good. It's just, again, I felt that this was more by the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't do anything that sports movies haven't done. It did it all well. It did it all fine. I know a lot of people probably didn't have a lot of experience with like mixed martial arts. Like, I'm a big fan of that. And me being a big fan of MMA made me like this a little less, I think, because there were some things that weren't realistic in it. Mm-hmm. But they did a nice job with Warrior, so I can't hate on that. It was good.
You didn't like all the power slams that went on?
There was just stuff that, you know, it just... I liked it. I'm putting it on my, you know, my... It's a good movie list. I'm not saying it's bad, but I've seen that in a lot of top 10 lists.
Mm-hmm.
Warrior and Midnight in Paris. And I'm like, what are you thinking? What are you doing? Good documentaries. Pearl Jam 20. I've probably talked about that 50 times on this show. That was also on American Masters. That's on instant streaming on Netflix. That's really good. Tallahena Sky, The Story of Kings of Leon, is real good if you're interested in seeing what hillbillies they spawn from.
Mm-hmm.
Watch those guys at their family reunion.
What
it's pretty wild. The Kings of Leon family is outrageous. A movie that you told me to get, I got on DVD, didn't make my top 15, but Tabloid.
Great.
Another good documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. That woman's a nut.
That
woman's a nut.
Is that the most compulsively watchable documentary ever? It's a really amazing.
I mean, it didn't make my top 15. I thought some of these other movies were better. But it's a real good documentary. So Tabloid by Errol Morris is great. Page One Inside the New York Times is good.
That's good, but not great.
Two Inside. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little Two Inside the New York Times. Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Werner Herzog, yeah. You know, you're killing all the stuff I would have
Maybe
mentioned.
My number 16 movie would be Cave of Forgotten Dreams. I saw that on 3D Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
The 3D was tremendous in that. It was really good.
You know, Werner Herzog made another documentary this year, which I think is a little better.
Oh, the Death Row one?
Into the Abyss.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Which is great, too. Werner Herzog is the most annoying fuck.
I love Werner Herzog.
No, but I mean, he's really about Werner Herzog.
Well.
And some documentarians... You never know what they're about.
Errol Morris, he talks a little bit in his,
ask questions.
Yeah.
But Herzog will ask people very specific questions. Like, he's talking to an Into the Abyss, which is about the death penalty and about a case in Texas. He's talking about the groundskeeper. He's talking to the guy who, like, I think his job is to drive the hearse or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, I'm worried I might drive and hit a squirrel.
Yeah.
Right? And Herzog's like, would you tell me more about this squirrel? You know what I mean? Like, he just gets it off into weird tangents.
But he is, like, he is compelling in that he sounds like the world's smartest man. You know what I mean? Like, this is a guy who you just think, you know, like, he seems like he's a guy who could build a BMW with his own two hands. You know what I mean? This guy seems like,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's inquisitive, and yet, you know, he gets outraged at certain times mm-hmm. by things, and he has this sense of wonder.
Right.
About this cave of, you know, look at the tigers as they are painted on the cave. You can only imagine what they would have looked like 30 million years ago.
There's a little bit too much. The cave paintings itself are cool in the movie, right. And they're very, they're well worth seeing, obviously.
Yeah,
they're masterpiece treasures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the French government's very protective about who can go in this cave.
Yeah.
And like five people a year can go in it.
Yeah.
Because they've had other caves like Lasso where they've had tourists. And it started to degrade.
Like the daylight, they say, or the oxygen, the people's breath.
Yeah. Just all the traffic of people going in mm-hmm. there has started to hurt the paintings.
Yeah.
So this cave, they're like, fuck you, no one's getting in here. So it's great that there's a movie about it, but he does show you the same shot of a buffalo.
There's 20 minutes of the buffalo.
You know what I mean? He'll pan from one side of the cave to the other. And then come back.
Right.
And you'll see the same
thing. Or they'll like zoom and then do the same pan, but just zoomed in 20%
right.
more.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. I mean,
it's really cool. Yeah. But just be prepared. It will drive you a little crazy, as most Werner Herzog movies do. But Into the Abyss is, I think, a little bit better. Tabloid is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I like Tabloid. But again, I think that's a movie that's, you know, it's all about the subject of the documentary.
Right.
And the subject is this bizarre woman that is a piece of work. You know, I mean, I don't even want to get into what Tabloid's about because it ruins it.
You can't spoil it. It's every second is something weird.
It's cool. I mean, again, you liked it more than I did, but it's real good. And the other documentary I would say that was good is something called Bill Cunningham, New York, which I don't. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
It's Bill. It's another New York Times movie. It's the guy who's the he's the satiety photographer, and he does street fashion photography. Mm. And he's like this 60-something-year-old guy who rides a bicycle around New York. And he takes pictures of all these women on the street, real, like, renegade style. And it's just interesting. I mean, again, he's the subject.
Okay.
It's not the greatest movie ever, but it's an interesting documentary. So, anyway, that's all my my honorable mentions and all that shit. So,
I would say...
And we'll do our worst in a second, but any other honorable mentions?
Senna, which was a documentary about...
Oh, the Ayrton Senna documentary.
Ayrton Senna, the Formula One driver.
I've heard of that, but
that's terrific. I mean, and I don't even really care about auto racing. Yeah, put that in your queue.
Bill Cunningham, New York is on Netflix. Pearl Jam 20 is on Netflix. Page One Inside the New York Times is on Netflix as well.
I think we've pretty much covered it. That's, you know...
Yeah.
You covered a lot of the ones I would have left off.
I didn't see stuff like War Horse. I never saw that.
You know,
that.
War Horse is real good, but it's... I think I gave it a B+.
Senna is available on instant streaming on Netflix. So if you want to see Senna, you can watch that right now.
That's a cool flick. There's a documentary called Thunder Soul, which is about this band in Texas, in Houston, you know, in a ghetto part of Houston. That in the 70s, their band director discovered James Brown. He was like an old school.
Okay.
He was like an old school jazz guy, and he turned them into this giant like funk band, and they toured the world, and they were one of the tightest funk bands on earth. And then they have a reunion concert, but that one is really absorbing and really cool.
How is something like Drive? Is that good? Because I see that on a lot of
That'd be on my nearly list.
I haven't had a chance to see that. I'm looking at my Netflix queue to see what I'm going to be seeing in the next few weeks. Beginners?
Beginners is... Oh, my God! Beginners!
Oh, Beginners is great.
Beginners is great!
I haven't seen that. It's on my queue. I'm telling
Christopher
you.
Christopher Plummer just won the Golden Globe for Beginners.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And what about...
I loved Beginners when it came out.
I didn't see it.
Beginners, by the way, is a movie, and you will think I'm the biggest mo. If some people will watch that movie and go... What a fruitcake you are, because it's very much like Submarine. It's very tender and kind of intimate and twee. But I loved Beginners.
Okay.
Really good. Ewan McGregor, Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer is the guy's dad who comes out when he's like 70.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to party now. I'm gay and I'm going to party and I'm 70. And it's like Ewan McGregor coming to terms with his gay dad.
Yeah, I've tried to convince my girlfriend to rent Beginners with me. She won't.
It's a beautiful movie.
What about stuff like Another Earth? Any good?
Didn't see Another Earth.
Okay, with The Guard?
Didn't see The Guard.
Don Cheadle and the
Brendan Gleeson. I didn't see it. Everybody loves it.
What about Miranda July's The Future? Any chance that's good?
When we do our worst of episodes.
Oh, that one's. We're doing that next, so just get ready. I'm just talking about stuff that I haven't. Ides of March.
Oh, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is good.
Yeah, that's on my list of stuff to see.
Ides of March is also on my missed list.
All right, so there's other good stuff coming up, yeah. I haven't seen The Devil's Double. I have sitting over there. I haven't seen that.
Carnage is worth seeing.
Okay.
Yeah, The Devil's Double.
Yeah, okay.
Carnage is worth seeing, although it might annoy people. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
There's good stuff. I mean, War Horse is really good.
Okay.
But it's a little schmaltzy because it's Steven Spielberg, and I can't believe you would imagine Steven Spielberg being schmaltzy. But folks, look, we picked some obscure stuff.
Right.
We picked some stuff nobody's heard of, but no one's listening, so it's okay.
Come on, no. It's simple. People will probably want... I mean, how could you listen to this and not want to watch one of these?
I hope you go
if
out
you
and
haven't
watch
watched,
some movies.
Go watch Win-Win. You'll love it.
Watch Win-Win. Watch 50-50. Watch some ones that got overlooked. Watch The Trip.
No, don't watch The Trip.
Watch Conan O'Brien.
The only one of your movies that I would tell people not to watch that I've seen is The Trip. Actually, I wouldn't say don't watch The Trip, but just if you're into
Conan,
that, you'll
would
like
you say
it.
Don't watch Conan?
Conan, I would say for most people would find that to be a bore.
Mm.
I mean, Submarine, I can't hate you for liking Submarine, even though I didn't like it as
all
much
right.
as you did. But anyway, you want to do worst real quick? I mean, I've only got a few written down for worst.
I think that's its whole other show, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll just do it quickly, and then we can actually have a real show about shit that's going on now. Because we've been doing lists for the last three fucking shows, but...
People are waiting for our New Hampshire primary coverage.
Yeah, give us your worst.
All right, worst movies of the year. Cars 2.
Okay. Didn't see it, but yeah.
Well, Cars 2 is a from Pixar Studios, and it's an animated film about Larry the Cable Guy's act. So that can suck my dick.
I'm lucky in that I choose the movies I want to see, unless my girlfriend forces me to watch it, but you actually have to go see stuff for your job. So you're in a much worse predicament than I am.
Terrible shit. Yeah. That's bad.
I mean, just tell us about the Sandler. I mean, do we even need to get... Because you hated Sandler. He was the asshole of the year, so...
He had three...
Jack and Jill.
He had... Just go with it. What are some bad movies? The new Conan movie wasn't very good.
Oh, the Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, Conan. Yeah. There was a movie that James Cameron produced called Sanctum.
Yeah, that was in 3D. That was not good.
It was cool as hell to look at.
Yeah.
The story and the actors were wretched.
Yeah.
You couldn't hate these people more.
Yeah, I never saw that. I want to get that Blu-ray. Watching it on a 3D TV.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just give you some bad ones. Cowboys and Aliens. I don't think you saw that, but
no,
don't bother with that. I mean, I know you're a Jon Favreau guy and you liked Iron Man and this, but you're really missing exactly nothing by not seeing Cowboys and Aliens. And that, who's the broad that's in that?
Uh-huh.
What's her name? The chick from House.
Did Chicky Juju? I don't know.
No, the girl from House. The world's most beautiful woman.
Aishwarya Rai?
No. I guess if I would have written this fucking shit down, Olivia Wilde.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a paper bag. She can't act her way out of it. This is the worst actress in America.
You apologize to Megan Fox.
Megan Fox. I've seen Megan Fox in she was in a terrible movie that she was good in. That 50 Ways to Lose People.
Oh, right. How to Lose Friends and
Alienate People. That was a terrible movie. She was good in it. The Smurfs. Was terrible.
Oh, okay. Sweet buttery Christ.
Right, here's what I'll say about Smurfs. My girlfriend wanted to watch that on 3D Blu-ray. So I rented this fucking 3D Blu-ray.
So you broke up with her right then.
And I watched Smurfs.
You said life is too short.
It wasn't good. But I expected it to be like a 1 out of 10, and it was like a 5 out of 10. It actually surprised me in that it wasn't... My feeling is the Smurfs... Okay. The Smurfs is retarded. Everything they've ever done on print, on television, is... really made at a kindergarten level. And this movie actually found a way to like, I thought Hank Azaria was kind of funny as Gargamel.
That was the only thing.
Exactly, but I'm not saying Smurfs was good. It's on my worst movies of the year list, but I actually thought it could have been worse. I think they tried to steal a lot from, like, Toy Story.
Well, it could have been worse.
And they gave the Smurfs their own little powers.
If it had been called Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Now, see, now that I didn't see, but I'm sure that's awful.
Unwatchable garbage. There was a Johnny English movie, a sequel to Johnny English.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I didn't
Rowan Atkinson,
see it, but I'm guaranteeing it's awful.
Well, at least talk about stuff you've seen, for fuck's sake.
Taylor Lautner in Abduction.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That wasn't
either.
Good.
And you said that that Justin Timberlake In Time was bad.
Yeah, In Time was maybe not bad enough to get on this
list.
One of
the worst, okay.
But bad.
Let me give you
two
more. Well, I think you almost said what I was going
to say. Go ahead.
Well, here's a movie that you're going to walk into Blockbuster or wherever you get movies. Maybe you're at the Redbox. You see this. It's got the greatest cast maybe in the history of cinema if you like a certain type of movie in it. Run as far away as you can from Our Idiot Brother. There's not one goddamn laugh in that movie.
What?
It was the biggest piece of garbage.
Bullshit!
That was a piece of
shit. That was a funny movie?
It was terrible. It was a horrible abortion of a movie.
That you didn't laugh at Our Idiot Brother?
That was like a steak if Judd Apatow had eaten it and spit it out. That's what it was. That was the equivalent. Our Idiot Brother was there was no comedy in it. Because I hate movies where they constantly do the poo poo pee pee joke. I know I talk about this when I talk about Two Broke Girls, but I almost wanted this movie just make an attempt to make us laugh. Because this is just a bunch of people sitting around a dinner table. I'm really bored with this. I hated Our Idiot Brother. Don't watch that. It's a piece of trash.
You are an asshole.
First of all,
that is a good movie.
Looked it up. They made that movie in like 4 months from script to screen.
Yeah.
And Paul Rudd shoved it through with his fucking Jesse Peretz guy, who's like his neighbor. It's a piece of shit.
Oh, you are wrong.
And his Zooey Deschanel's in it and Rashida Jones and all these great actors. And it's terrible. It's terrible. Terrible.
You have no taste, my friend. No, look, I don't think Our Idiot Brother was a great movie by any means, but it was not terrible.
It
You want a fun comedy that was terrible?
It was an abortion.
You want a bad comedy?
I gave it 2 stars. Let me see what the rest of the people gave it.
They gave it better than you.
I gave it 2. It has an average of 3.3 out of 5.
All right.
On Netflix. So
look, I'm not saying it was a great movie, but you're wrong. It's a funny movie. It's got laughs.
Let me read you a Netflix review. Wow. After 35 minutes, I had to eject the DVD. And Chelsea Handler said this movie was hilarious. I am over movies where a cast of characters are not accepting and judgmental all the time in their tones and reactions. There was no humor in that New York City elitist superiority. Ick, this movie made me feel like I was sinking wherein I find no entertainment value. That's just one guy.
Come on.
There's some good reviews, too. I found it just, like, it was just a waste of a cast. I wouldn't expect much. You know what I mean? This was like, you know, Edward Burns laughs at this movie. That's how bad this was. This is what it...
All right, it got a 68 on Rotten. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 68.
It was trying to be Hannah and Her Sisters, and it wasn't.
Okay, fine. It's not the best movie, but it's...
I'm saying it's bad based on what it could have been, maybe. Maybe I'm saying
that. Well, then this is... Okay, the next
movie...
Bad
at what it could have been.
This next movie I'm going to mention gets on this list for that reason.
Yes.
Based on expectations.
Because I haven't done my worst movie of the year yet.
The Hangover Part 2.
Okay. I gave that a thumbs up, but I can see where it's the exact same
based
fucking
on
movie.
Expectations,
yeah.
It's the same fucking
it's
thing.
The same fucking thing.
And it loses a lot of its shock comedy value.
It is, yeah.
There's not I like the part where he was walking around drinking a bag of Fanta.
Yeah.
That's about all that I remember.
The Hangover 2 was like if you go to a comedy club and you watch the comic at 8 o'clock Friday. And then you stick around for the 10:30 show,
mm-hmm.
and the crowd's just more drunk and everything's a little sloppier. That's mm-hmm. kind of what Hangover 2 is.
Yep.
It's the late show Friday compared to...
It really
you know,
is.
It's
There's a... Here's a, one of the many things that was wrong with Hangover 2 is not only did they do the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
There's a scene where originally Mel Gibson was going to be in the scene mm-hmm. where, he, you know, it's just a little scene. But it was supposed to be Mel Gibson, and Zach Galifianakis didn't want to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
They put some guy who wasn't famous in it.
No, he's a director. It's I'll look him up. I know
okay.
who it is.
You know what I'm saying? It's not a guy you recognize. That scene then laid there like a turd on the side of the road. Because
Mel Gibson got lucky. Wasn't
you know what I mean, though? Right. If Mel Gibson had been in that scene, it would have gotten a laugh. Because it would have been Mel Gibson doing something crazy.
Right.
Instead, it's a guy you've never seen or heard of. And
he actually is. What is his name? I'm looking it up here. Hangover.
They could have put fucking Brian Benben in the movie. No, I don't.
I know
shit.
What you mean. Yeah, they went out and got Nick. It's Nick Cassavetes.
Who gives a
who's
fuck?
Who's a director and acts and some things.
But he's not someone you recognize.
He's probably one of Todd Haynes' buddies or Todd.
Even if they'd gotten
Todd
Rob,
Phillips' buddies.
Rob Riggle. They got some actor. You know what I mean?
You're right, yeah.
There was no. But that scene then sat there for 5 minutes.
But the character didn't have much to do funny anyway. So.
No, but it would have been funny if it had been
saying.
Mel Gibson.
Rob Riggle's
it was a
in the
cameo. What it was was a cameo that turned out not to be a cameo, so they left it in the movie.
Yeah. And by the way, whatever they did good with Mike Tyson in the first one, they kind of ruined Mike Tyson in the second one.
Oh, how about Country Strong, Joel?
Didn't see it, but I if you say it sucks, I'm with you.
Are you,
you
telling
buddy.
Me you don't want to see Gwyneth Paltrow as a country and western singer?
I'm with
singer?
You.
Oh.
Well, you haven't hit my again. This might have been a movie that we expected to be good too, based upon who was in it. But my worst movie of the year, worse than Smurfs.
Now was it? Wait, hold on. Did this come out in 2011 or 2010? The Tourist.
I don't know. Oh, Johnny Depp and the Johnny Depp movie.
Angelina Jolie?
2010, yeah.
Okay, that was 2010. What a disappointment that was.
No, my worst movie in the year. Fucking, here's your goddamn drum roll. Come on, let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it officially. The worst movie of 2011. You're going to throw your hands up and like, how did I forget about this? The remake of Arthur with Russell Brand and Helen Mirren.
I was about to say.
Okay. We saw Arthur together. We took the wives over to Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
We took the girlfriends out on a double date.
Yeah.
And what a piece of garbage Arthur was.
Yeah, directitude.
I think
Russell Brand's about talked his way out of show business.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Katy Perry threw him out,
I think that sort of... He does this little skit where he says things that are quite clever and sort of randy.
It's
quite tedious after a while, isn't it, then? And a bit of my fashion of speaking.
Right.
Is it tiring on you?
Because I love the original Arthur. And even if you hate the original Arthur, there's no way you could like this. You know what I mean? You can't go like, well, look, they improved all these parts
again,
of Arthur. And it's
again,
They tried. They picked up the original Arthur, threw out 90% of it, but then the 10% they kept,
yeah,
just held down what they were trying to do originally. Well, it just didn't work.
It just wasn't. Dudley Moore was kind of funny playing off other people.
Yeah.
Russell Brand plays off himself. He doesn't play off other people.
Yeah.
He just is a wild, wacky monologist.
Yeah.
And that movie killed Greta Gerwig's career.
Greta Gerwig was this hot indie star that they gave her big push to.
Boom, hit a wall.
And it's all over.
Killed her dead.
She's in something coming out.
You know what I mean, though. But,
It's like they took him and sort of, whereas maybe Arthur was the fish out of water. He was the drunk that people had to respect because he had money when Dudley Moore played him. Now it's just like no one was outraged with Arthur.
No.
He kind of just got away with whatever he wanted
to do.
He
was cute.
Yeah, it was like, oh, okay, it's him.
It just didn't work.
No, you're like Paris Hilton, but a guy. You know,
but here's what you're...
Yuck.
If you're going to make a remake,
yeah,
do something with it.
Right.
Make it a little different.
Are any of these remakes? I mean, what has been a good remake? Thing came out this year. You said that was a prequel, though, sort of.
Not technically a remake.
Right.
Wasn't great. Wasn't awful. It was kind of meh. It was okay.
Yeah.
It had its moments of entertainment. The remake that was dreadful,
yeah,
because it was exactly the same movie, Footloose.
Oh.
Didn't change a thing.
I honestly feel sorry for people that went to Footloose.
Yeah.
I honestly kind of go like maybe they should pass some bill to recompensate people for their time and money and seeing Footloose. Like I just go, who wanted to see that?
Right.
They're
called women.
Yeah.
They have vaginas.
Yeah, I guess.
Then there's gay people, and they enjoy Footloose as well.
Do studios... Like, when they float the Footloose remake, there's somewhere there's a boardroom where there's people are meeting, and people are talking. And there's nobody that goes in and says, I think that's a bad idea.
Mm.
Like, nobody says that. Or do they fire the guy? Is everyone too afraid?
No, yeah.
Like, nobody. But you and I look at that immediately and go, that's a piece of shit.
Okay. The original movie, Footloose, was a piece
of... It was a piece of shit, too, yeah.
Piece of shit.
Exactly, yeah.
That there's no getting around it,
right.
Even though people liked it and it was cute and they remember it, if you really try and watch it, it's not good.
Uh-huh.
They took the movie, the original Footloose, which, by the way, though Footloose has this thing that I've been talking about. It's not a good movie, but it has memorable moments.
Well, it's...
Right? It has scenes...
Everybody's an archetype, and it's... You can follow it, you can connect all the dots, and it makes sense.
There's a fine line between a great movie and a good movie, and... what it is, there's something memorable about it. Mm-hmm. I don't think Footloose is a good movie, but it's got a memorable thing about
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah.
They made the new Footloose. They got a kid. He was Marky Mark's backup dancer. Or was some, like, he was like
don't
a,
even know what it is.
This is a kid who's like a backup dancer to, he's brutal.
Really?
Anyway, just a backup dancer and couldn't act worth a fucking lick. He's got this thick Boston accent. So the only difference is now this time Ren is from Boston.
Yeah.
And he goes to, like, Georgia instead of Iowa.
Oh, okay.
So that they can include 4 black people in the movie. Right? So they can have the
'cause that's what Footloose was missing the first time
around.
Right,
right. Yeah. They don't have the one black dude going, man, you crazy.
Yeah.
And so they got 4 black people in it.
Dude, they teach the nerdy guy how to dance
they
at one
sure
point.
Do.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
It's exactly the same movie.
Yeah.
The girl who's supposed to be playing Sarah Jessica Parker's part looks like Sarah Jessica Parker, but is like half black.
Okay.
She's got like a big hook nose and curly hair.
So does this mean now that Julianne Hough has been in the worst movie of the year 2 years running because she was also in Burlesque? Is that safe to say? Do we declare her? Is she going back to Dancing with the Stars after this?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, is that 2 failed attempts at Hollywood success that went nowhere?
Oh, God, there's so many.
Yeah.
The Change Up was bad.
Oh, my girlfriend watched that, and she goes, like, she rented that, and I go, I don't need to see that, so you can watch that after I go home. And she's like, yeah, you'd hate that, because it was all about the baby pooping. It was not...
There's baby poop in, like, the first 5 minutes of it.
Yeah, she said that would be bad.
Big mamas, like father, like son.
My friend is in that, Brandon T. Jackson.
Well, sorry for him.
I'm sorry, too, Brandon.
Brandon was also in a piece of shit... called Percy Jackson the Lightning Thief.
That was a couple of years ago, though.
So. But he was in Tropic Thunder. So
he's riding
Brandon's,
that.
Brandon's hitting about 340.
Riding that wave. Yeah,
hitting about 340.
It's hard out there.
Mm-hmm. Zookeeper.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Sandler. Doesn't Sandler have his fingerprints on Zookeeper?
Yeah, producer on that.
Oh, fuck.
Just some dreadful stuff.
Are you on like Rotten Tomatoes looking at their
worst? Well, I'm looking. I got a list, but they hate all these.
Yeah.
Season of the Witch with Nicolas Cage.
Didn't see it.
Nicolas Cage did a couple shitty movies in the winter last year, or that came out in the winter last year. One was Drive Angry 3D, but I kind of enjoyed that in a dumb way. Much like Piranha 3D was wildly entertaining.
Yeah, I like Piranha 3D.
It was it was
Piranha
stupid,
3D was cool.
But it
cool,
knew what it was doing, and Drive Angry kind of knew what it was doing. The Season of the Witch is a debacle.
Is that like sort of a Lord of the Rings or something? What is the point of that?
Yeah,
that
it's like, got a little bit of, it's a nice
fantasy sorcery
with a little fantasy element in it. It's dreadful. It's dreckitude. It's suckitude. I've banned Michael Bay. I won't watch any Michael Bay films, so I didn't see Transformers 3.
I didn't either, so I can't include that on any list.
But, There's some bad movies out there, my friend.
Yeah, I didn't like I said, I'm lucky in that I'm not forced to watch a lot of bad shit. So Cowboys and Aliens, I saw at the drive-in. Our Idiot Brother, my girlfriend rooked me in.
A movie by a guy who should know better, James L. Brooks, did a movie called How Do You Know? How did you watch it?
Was it not last year? No?
No, it came out real early in the year, this year. Or in 2011, which is last year now.
Okay.
But fine. Reese Witherspoon, Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
It's got a good cast. Jack Nicholson. You think, oh, this is going to be something. It's horrible. Just heinously horrible. Dreckitude. And then that's hit the drum roll for the worst movie.
The worst movie of the year, Core has. And this isn't a Sandler movie.
No, it is.
Oh, I guess I ruined your drum roll.
It's fine. You had two options to pick from. You actually had three.
Wow.
You had Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star.
Yeah.
You had Just Go With It.
Yeah.
That Just Go With It edges out just barely. It gets by on the strength of Brooklyn Decker's tits.
Okay.
It gives you something to look at, right?
Something that actually worked in the movie.
Yeah, Jennifer Aniston and Brooklyn Decker have bikini scenes.
Uh-huh.
So, marginal.
Okay.
Pass. Jack and Jill.
The worst movie of the year.
Maybe one of the worst movies ever made. It's so despicably horrible,
stupid.
It does
look terrible, yeah.
It's such a wretched suck job.
Right.
It makes grown-ups look like a masterpiece.
Right.
It's just the laziest filmmaking. It's Sandler hiring his buddy Dennis Dugan to go, point the camera over here.
But did they do some sort of, you know, blue screen stuff with the twins? I mean, this must have been harder to make than his typical garbage, but... With him playing two roles, but yeah, was that the worst reviewed movie of the year, or did Bucky Larson
has
a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes?
Got a zero
on Rotten Tomatoes, yeah. So not one critic like that.
Not at all.
Not a single critic that saw Bucky Larson.
No.
Yeah. Well,
which is almost impossible to do. You know, because there's these hacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you could just punch up something called Dunkachino.
Yeah.
If you could put that into the YouTube.
What is Dunkachino?
You got to hear it.
Well,
it's incredible.
How do I spell Dunkachino? What is that?
It's like Al Pacino, but you put Dunka in front of it.
Dunkachino.
Go ahead and hit play on that. Put the mic.
Al Pacino doing a Dunkin' Donuts bit in the Jack and Jill movie.
All right. Here you go.
Okay. So this is a...
Something's brewing at D&D.
I don't know. It's a commercial inside the movie.
Wow! Al Pacino!
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
What's my name?
Dunkachino.
It's a whole new game.
Dunkachino.
It's supposed to be stupid. It's supposed to be stupid, but it's so stupid.
Hello to my chocolate blend. Attica, ooh, I love he like. This whole trial is out of sight. They pull me back in with hazelnut, too. Caramel swirl. I know it was you. Everyone wants my Dunkachino.
Yeah, it's awful, right?
I can't get enough of my
Dunkachino. And even Al Pacino knows it's bad.
From 7 to 17, lining up for my Dunkachino.
He's trying to save
the movie. What's my name? Dunkachino.
It's one of those things that they convince you will be bad. I'm sure Al Pacino didn't want to do that when they originally brought it to him.
And boom, there you have it. It's actually 32 seconds, so I got to lose 2 seconds. Maybe you can tell me what part you would lose, but I think we are getting there.
You were my asshole of the year, and you have my worst movie.
The worst movie of the year,
and you can suck it.
And
Adam
anything
Sandler.
Else could he? Could he? What else could he do? Make a bad television show?
Yeah.
What other list can he strive to be on top of?
He could run for office. I don't know what he would do. Just go, take your money, go get an island in the Bahamas,
yeah, well,
and just get out of my life. You unfunny, hacky piece of shit.
Finally, in 2011. It all ends for Adam Sandler. That's it.
I saw a copy of Punch Drunk Love, his best movie,
yeah,
for $3 in a bin the other day.
Was it at 7-Eleven or something?
Yeah. And I said,
well, you know, I know what his
FYE.
I know what his next movie is.
Yeah.
It's something called I Hate You, Dad. And here's why I know what that is. Because when I had the pleasure, and I don't say that facetiously, of hanging out with Vanilla Ice this summer at the Gathering of the Juggalos, I got to hear and see all lots of backstage photos. You know, Ice brought out his iPhone and showed me all of his backstage pictures from I Hate You, Dad, that he is in with Adam Sandler. So that's coming out probably next summer or something.
Well,
so.
I'm glad that Rob Van Winkle can pay his mortgage, but just...
Yeah, but it's, you know, that's what he's doing next.
Oh.
Vanilla Ice jumps off the Green Monster at Fenway Park. Look forward to that.
I will say one good thing in films this year is that Jimmy Fallon's got a full-time job. So
he's off of the movie. My girlfriend, I was talking to her. She's like, you know, that movie Taxi was on the other day. And it wasn't so much Jimmy Fallon, but Queen Latifah was terrible. And I go, well, you know.
Hey, next year when we do the worst movies of 2012... Just save a spot for Joyful Noise with Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton.
All right, let's get out of here. That was fun. The best movies of 2011. I hope you enjoyed our lists. Go rent them. Go see them if you haven't. Probably and better than anything at the theater now, in all likelihood, unless you're watching those.
Oh, I'm gonna
Oscar contenders.
One more worst movie.
One more.
All horror movies. They're all terrible these days.
Yeah.
They're pretty much
I don't think either of us had what would be. The Last Circus is weird, but it's not really a horror.
Although Paranormal Activity 3 was.
Oh, you like that one.
Kind of fun in being stupid. All right, anyway, guys.
Right, let's get out of here. Let's say goodnight. Thank you, Corey. It was an exhausting list.
I'm
I worked
tired.
Hours on this. And
I'm tired of Sandler.
I know you did, too.
Get your dewy beak out of my life.
Let's get out of here. Thank you for listening to Joel Radio, everybody. Hit us up. Send us a message from joelradio.net. Leave a comment on the show there. 610-552-0746 is the douchebag hotline. Leave us a voicemail message. And we'll catch you next time on Joel Radio. Go watch some good movies. You got lots of suggestions now. Go do it.
Yes, sir.
See you later.